Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 108.
The House will come to order. The chair is going to allow our visitors who are on the floor to remain because this is simply going to be admin for just a bit. We have some special guests who I'm going to wait and introduce when we come back in at noon. They're with us today. But would ask everyone to come to order and to stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance afterwards. The prayer is going to be delivered this morning by Representative Arp. So Representative Arp, the gentleman has the floor for the prayer.
Thank you. If you would like to join with me as I lead in prayer, please do so. Dear Heavenly Father, I come before you today praising you for the many blessings of life and liberty you have bestowed upon us, and that we live in a state and nation that is free. You, God, are all sovereign over our lives and know our hearts and our struggles. You know that we are all broken and sinners, but you find that new and abundant life in you. I thank you, God, for bringing us together to glorify your name in all that we do. Therefore, let us be pure in our actions, far from evil intent, honest in our dealings with others and with you, and let us be righteous. Your Son Jesus did not come to serve, but to serve others and to give his life a ransom for many. We thank you for the chance we have to serve others because you first served us. Today, Lord, I come to you asking for wisdom and guidance, especially as we consider the budget and the blessings that you've so richly, abundantly poured upon us as a state and nation. Bless us and guide us in our decisions, that we make decisions that bring honor and glory to you. Help us to love and serve the people of North Carolina because you love them. It is your will that will prevail. You are sovereign above all else. I love you and I praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The gentleman from Macon, Representative Gillespie, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for August 11th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that we approve as written.
Representative Gillespie moves that the journal for August 11th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bills duly ratified for presentation to the governor. House Bill 78, an act to authorize additional nationally standardized tests to satisfy ninth grade private school testing requirements and to make changes for in-state tuition for veterans to comply with federal law. House Bill 121, an act to clarify funding for certain water resources projects under the Environmental Quality Incentives Program to exempt certain dredging projects, ferry channel from shallow draft, navigation channel dredging, aquatic weed fund cost share requirements, and to extend the Hatteras-Ocracoke passenger ferry lease. House Bill 461, an act to make clarifying and technical changes in the state of auditor statute. House Bill 729, an act to authorize all governing boards of public school units to request residency licensing to change the membership of North Carolina Charter Schools Advisory Board and to create a stagger for the appointment to the board. And the following bills duly ratify, properly enroll, and prepare for presentation to the Office of Secretary of State. House Bill 206, an act authorizing the town of Lewisburg to use revenue derived from rates of electric service and economic development project and will increase the town of number of electric customers of electric load. House Bill 365, an act to expand the authorized use for airport facilities and premises governed by the Greater Asheville Regional Airport Authority and to allow the Pitt County to use attachment of garnishment and lien for county contractor ambulance service supplemented by county funds.
Chapter bills will be noted. Representative Hurley is recognized to send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Hurley, Education Community College Committee Report, Senate Bill 421, CCN State Tuition, Favor House Committee Substitute, Unfavorable Research Bill, and refer to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
The original bill is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee Substitute will is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. Messages from the Senate. The court will read.
House Bill 273, Senate Committee Substitute, Third Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to exempt from property tax to increase the value of property due to construction of townhouses held for sale by a builder for concurrence in the Senate Committee Substitute.
That'll be calendar for today. Court may continue.
House Bill 481, Committee Substitute Number 2, Third Edition, a bill to the Entitlement Act to allow each department, agency, institution, commission, a bureau of executive, judicial, legislative branch of North Carolina, campus police, the law enforcement agencies of the constituent institution of the University of North Carolina to sell, trade, or otherwise dispose of any or all surplus weapons of their possession of any federal licensed firearm dealer, for concurrence in the Senate Amendment Number 1, Number 2, and Number 3.
Counter to Rule 36B. For what purpose, the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to let members know I texted Representative Kidwell a while ago to check on how he and Vicky are doing. He says, my fever seems to have gone. Just walking to the bathroom is exhausting. Vicky is still not out of the woods. So we certainly need to continue to keep them in our prayers. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Representative Pittman. We appreciate the update. I know that I believe Representative Kidwell is doing better, but his wife is still challenging. And Chair will announce later on, we do have a number of members battling various illnesses. So these are always challenging times as we still work to get the people's business done. Members, we do have a number of recognitions. The chair would like to wait and do those at noon. Just to let folks know where we are, I know we have a number of guests in the gallery and folks watching online as well. The House, I believe it's the Redistricting Committee, joint Redistricting Committee is still meeting, and the chair received a request to allow them to conclude their business prior to session. So the chair is going to is authorized that committee to continue its meeting, its deliberations during this period. So we are about to go into recess until noon. We are still receiving amendments to the budget. Those are being processed by staff so that once we resume business at noon, we'll be able to move through that. So the time is certainly being used wisely. But certainly do would have liked to start at 11, but I know folks understand that when you have multiple committees meeting that these things happen. So we'll do that. Representative Arp, can the gentleman approach the dais? And members, we have a couple guests that we would like to go ahead and recognize because I don't know if they're going to be back. If they are, they'll get introduced again. But on motion of Representatives Arp and Brody of Union County and Representative Willis of Union County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Ken Brown. And if y'all please stand when I call your name, Ken Brown, who is the Unionville Fire Department Chief, Matt Henson, who is the Unionville Fire Department Assistant Chief, and then Ben Henson, who is the Unionville Fire Department Captain. I want to thank you for being here. Thanks for what you do every day, and we're honored to have you with us. And ask my colleagues who are with us presently to join us in welcoming these gentlemen here with us today. And gentlemen, if you are back at noon when we have session, you'll be recognized again. So now you've had a dress rehearsal, so you know what to expect the next time. But thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. Any notices or announcements before I put the House in recess? All right, seeing none, the chair is going to declare that the House stands in recess subject to the standard stipulations until noon today. So ordered. Members, the redistricting, the Joint Redistricting Committee concluded its business just a bit ago, and so we had held off to allow that committee to dispose of its business as we move forward. So we are, and we've already opened session earlier today. The chair is aware that a number of members are still coming in, but we are honored today with a special guest that I do want to recognize. And before I do that, I'm going to recognize the lady from Wake, Representative Perret, to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I proudly rise today to recognize the accomplishments of Olympic champion silver medalist Andrew Capobianco of my district, Holly Springs, North Carolina. Andrew competed and won the silver medal for Team USA in the men's synchronized 3-meter springboard event, along with his diving partner, Olympic veteran Michael Hickson, in the 2021 Olympic Games in Tokyo. Andrew is an outstanding person and accomplished athlete. Having started out as an all-star gymnast, he shifted to diving at the age of 11, and the rest is history. He is a graduate of Holly Springs High School, where he won back-to-back state championships in 2016 and 17 in the men's 1-meter diving event. He currently attends Indiana University Bloomington, where he has earned All-American honors 7 times. Andrew is involved in numerous charities that assist children with disabilities in sports and social activities, and is a dedicated follower of Christ. Andrew is here with his father, Michael Capobianco, a former NYPD officer who was on duty during 9/11, and his mother, Darlene Capobianco, a former Nassau County police officer who served for over 25 years. Andrew has 2 brothers, one his twin, who are also very successful and accomplished young men and are also supporters of their brother, Andrew. Andrew, I think I can speak for all members of this body and North Carolina. North Carolinians all across the state, we are so proud of you, going to represent the greatest nation in the world, compete against the world's best, and winning. Today we celebrate you and your achievements on the world stage. We are glad to see you back home safe and sound. Congratulations.
Members, for those who didn't recognize Andrew, he's the guy with the really large Olympic medal around his neck right there. Andrew, on behalf of my colleagues and I just want to tell you how proud we are of how you performed in the Olympics, how well you represented our state, our nation, yourself and your family. I know they and every one of us, we are all very proud of what you've done, of helping bring more medals back to the United States, and was certainly a very unique Olympics given the delays and with COVID. I can only imagine the interesting stories and things that you saw and heard and observed, and these will be memories that you cherish for a lifetime. And of course, there's going to be another shot in just a few years to be back at it, and I have a feeling you'll be there too. But I want to make sure we've recognized Andrew, but I do want to recognize his family who's also with us, and I'm going to call them out and ask them to stand and ask us to welcome them as well. He's joined by his father, Mike Capobianco, his mother, Darlene Capobianco, family friend, Ann Fowler, who's a resident of Apex, Joe Asiato, who's also a resident, and then, of course, Representative Perret's husband, Wayne. I want to thank y'all for being there. I would ask our colleagues to please join us and welcome them with us as well. So, Andrew, with that, we certainly wish you the best, and thank you, and we thank your family for being with us today. Please know that we're solidly in your corner, congratulating you on your win, and we can cheer you on to even more future victories. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
rise for a point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. I just want to say in this body that today, 95 years ago, my mother, Pauline Gallup Jones, was born in Currituck County, which is not in my district, and she now lives in Guilford County, which is my district. But I just want to say happy birthday to Pauline Jones, who birthed me 69 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please pass along our happy birthday wishes as well, and I know she's very proud of you for all you've done and continue to do as well. So we appreciate you sharing that with us, Representative Jones. There. For our purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Maury Rice.
Point of personal privilege.
Lady has the floor.
I would just like to add my congratulations to Andrew and his family. As a member of the 1976 Olympic swim team, I know the dedication that he has put in going to Indiana University, where I also swam, but especially his family and his parents. It is a team effort, and Andrew came back with a silver medal. I came back with no medals, and now I'm sitting in the General Assembly. So there you go. But congratulations, Andrew.
Thank you, Representative Moore. I didn't realize you were on the Olympic team. That is amazing. So that is very impressive. Thanks for sharing that. As far as I'm concerned, you get a gold medal every day here, though. So thank you. So members, we have, I want to see if our appropriations chairs are ready. I know that a number of folks were coming back from across the street, and I see a few empty seats here. So we'll stand at ease momentarily so we see if we're ready to start proceeding with the budget. We do have one other matter, which is I don't know if it's a conference report or a motion to concur that can be done at some point. So it'll be a concurrence vote, but I do know some folks are trying to make their way over, so we'll stand at ease momentarily. Members, we're going to continue trying to round up members. I see empty seats on both sides of the chamber, so I know folks were in the other building and folks are probably trying to grab something to bring to the floor. By the way, pursuant to our rules, members are allowed to have food on the floor, so best restaurant in Raleigh right here, so. All right, members of the House will come back to order. So let's go ahead and take care of House Bill 273. The clerk will read.
Representative Potts, Bradford, Zinger, and Clemens, House Bill 273, a bill to be entitled an act to exempt from property tax to increase the value of property due to the construction of townhouses held for sale by a builder. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Davidson, Representative Potts, is recognized for a motion.
I move that we concur with the Senate report.
The gentleman has moved that the House do concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 273, and the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a date change that passed 115-1. I believe one of the representatives from the other party voted against it. I'll see them after class if that happens again today. But this just changes the date, effective date, because July 1st, 2021 is already passed. Thank you, sir.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the motion to concur with House Bill 273. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. And the chair will hold the vote open for a few minutes because I know there's still several members coming in. Bowles, aye. Harp, aye. Representative Brockman, make to your desk. Representative Graham, gentlemen wish to vote on it? Looks like we are missing so far McNeely, Hawkins, Bradford, Reeves, Rogers, Warren, and Sane. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 105 having voted in the affirmative and one in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate committee substitute to House Bill 273. The bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 105, the clerk will read.
Senators Jackson, Aarons, and Heist. Senate Bill 105, a bill to be entitled an act making base budget appropriations for current operations of state agencies, departments, and institutions for other purposes. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, is recognized to debate the bill on third reading.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. We had a good discussion, good debate yesterday, very respectful, and I appreciate that. You know, we're not always going to agree, but as long as we keep it respectful and know that we're all here for the same purpose, I can live with that. I did want to address a few issues. You know, there's things in this budget that I don't like. There's things in most bills, quite frankly, that I don't like, and I often have to hold my nose because the general tenor of a bill is pretty good. So I have to make the decision to support a bill that generally is pretty good and does good things. I would tell you there's things in this budget I don't like. And I'll give you an example. I don't like the millions of dollars we continue to invest in NC Fast. But I kind of get that it's necessary to do the things that we have to do in HHS. I actually don't like the lottery that much. If I could do away with the lottery, I probably would do away with the lottery. But we're now very dependent on the lottery funds. You know, I think y'all know my position on Medicaid. I don't even agree with my colleagues, for the most part, on Medicaid. We can have healthy debates and healthy discussions and disagreements. That's okay. It's been very respectful in that respect. I did want to address a few issues that came up yesterday, and one of them was process. And, you know, this is a lengthy process. We started way back in February. And when we start as appropriation chairs, we invite the governor's staff in. We go through the governor's budget. We go through their priorities and their needs and their issues. We spend literally hours working with the staff in the budget office to understand where they are, what they want, what their needs are, what the priorities are. And then as the process moves across and through, we have committees set up and we ask for input in each of the different areas. And you have an opportunity, as I do, to provide input on those committees. My door is always open. Some choose to come and lobby and ask. I'd like to hear if you have a priority request. Doesn't mean we can always meet the needs, but we will certainly look and give an evaluation. We meet with generally every secretary and cabinet position to listen to them. And as you know, we have lots of lobbyists around here that are free and open to providing us input. So we get lots of feedback.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise?
Point of order. I'm having a hard time hearing Representative Lambeth, and I'm two rows from him.
Right. So, and the chair, certainly under Rule 53 can, if those folks who are, this is the people's house, and those folks who, don't respect the process under Rule 53 can be removed from the building. So I'm going to instruct the Sergeant at Arms and the, and our General Assembly Police to notify our guests to please maintain decorum and not interfere in the proceedings, and those who cannot do so can go somewhere else. The gentleman from Forsyth has the floor to continue debating.
The process here is very similar to actually what I came from in business. You have silos, you have administrative staff. Everybody can't be the governor. Everybody can't be on appropriations committee, and everybody can't be a senior chair. We have a process in place that allows, I call it the bubble up theory. Things bubble up. Inputs received, inputs taken. Decisions are made. Now the one thing I certainly do apologize or certainly don't like down here is we're rushed on not just the budget, but we're rushed on a lot of bills. Sometimes they'll give me a 50-page bill and says we're going to vote on this tomorrow. This budget, we shouldn't be here, quite frankly, in August debating a budget. We should have had this budget done back in June. But we are where we are. And I'm as anxious as anybody to get this to the next level. And that, we know, is a conference committee that will take even longer to kind of work through to get this budget to the governor. We're going to be here in September still talking about budget. When most of our state agencies, our cities and our counties, they already implemented a July 1 fiscal year and a budget, and we're still down here debating a budget. So I apologize that we can't move it along any quicker and we couldn't get it any faster to you, but I do hope that we've had, through the process, a lot of vetting over the last few days. And I would tell you, we've taken a lot of input on amendments, and we've tried to adjust those where we could. We know we got a long ways to go still with the Senate, and that negotiation, quite frankly, is a challenge and a difficult one. And we need as many votes as we can to put us in a position to negotiate stronger with the Senate. And then we'll take the next step and plan our meetings with the governor and governor's staff. I want to address, and I hear this probably every budget season. It's just not enough money. It's just not enough money. We need more. Well, I hear that at home every once in a while. We need more. We need more. And boy, if I could give you more, I would certainly do that. But we are fiscally constrained by a lot of factors. And I just want to share something. And I don't want to bore you with the numbers at a federal level, but the federal level, quite frankly, is out of control. In North Carolina, we have fiscally responsible and sound management of our finances. And the day we stop doing that and start acting like Washington, I'm the first to get out of here because I don't want to be part of that. Let me just share some of these numbers at the federal level. Federal debt, 2000, $5 trillion, 55% debt to GDP. 2012, it had grown to $16 trillion. August 2021, $28.4 trillion. Now, this goes across Republican and Democrat administration. They're all at fault, quite frankly. $28.4 trillion. You know what the ratio of debt to GDP is now? 130%. It exceeds the entire U.S. budget, the debt. The ideal rate, the economists tell us, is somewhere below 60%. Where did we get off track in Washington that we have letting the debt spiral out of control? You know what the average debt per person child to senior citizen this country is now? $85,476 for every person. If you're proud of that, raise your hand. If you're proud of that, raise your hand. We do not need in North Carolina to borrow our future. Now, I could, like I every once in a while have to give my wife, this credit card. You know what Washington does? They just put this credit card down and they say, put it on the card. Put this $5.4 billion that we just sent to North Carolina that they're spending on this card. We'll let the kids worry about it. I won't have to worry about it because I won't be here. Our kids are going to have to worry about it. This country is on a road to disaster economically. And I hope you understand, we are not in that position in North Carolina. We have been fiscally responsible. We pay our bills. We're trying to reduce the debt. We want to do what's right for our children, for North Carolina, from a fiscal standpoint. So I can give you my card. We want to spend more. Here's my card. I'll try to avoid paying that bill when it comes due. It was education funding questions. And you know, I'm a K-12 guy. I'm a pre-K guy. I want to do more if we can. I want to do more within the limitations of our resources. But let's just talk about teacher pay. My wife's a teacher. Do you know that? My favorite joke back home is, I sleep with a teacher. My wife's a teacher. I have two kids are teachers. I love teachers. Let me share. Because we forget. Teacher pay. And I'm going to give you a little credit. 2008-09. This is from the fiscal staff. Teacher pay. Average increase, 3%. Teacher pay in 10, 0%. Teacher pay in 11, 0%. Teacher pay in 12, 0%. We didn't give teachers anything back in 3 years. You wonder today why Leandro's a problem? Because we weren't spending money 10, 15 years ago to support education. It's a problem today because it's a problem then. Let me give you the numbers for today. What we've done in the last 5 years in teacher pay. 14-15. Average teacher pay, 7%. 15-16, 3.8%. 16-17, 4.7%. 17-18, 3.3%. 18-19, 6.5%. And, of course, we had a vetoed budget that had over 6% in it. Our overall spending in education has increased per student 16.3% since 2015. We put additional $1 billion in education just from the lottery and from fines and forfeitures. It's not in those numbers, those spend numbers. Unemployment rate 10 years ago. And we worry about it today. 10 years ago, 11% in North Carolina. 11%. Today, even with the pandemic and all the complaints and the issues we've had worrying about the unemployment rate and being too high, 4.6. It's been cut more than half in the last 10 years. Do you think there's a correlation there with fiscal policy and prudent policy and reducing tax structure and recruiting more businesses here to put more of our people to work? I think there is. I think there's a correlation to what we've done economically with the number of people we've been able to put back to work. The last thing I'll say, and I've probably said more than I should, if you vote against this budget, and I can tell you, I've spent enough time with my own colleagues to know that there's things in here they don't like. There's things in here they would have liked to had in here. There were times we had to say no. And they're not happy with some of us because we had to say no to items that they would have liked to see in this budget. But let me tell you, I'd like to go with you, in fact, and I offer to go with you to these institutions. For those of you who have to tell them, I voted against this budget and I voted against this funding for you and your area. Shaw University, right down the street here. I come by there every morning. I look at some of their buildings. This budget includes $11.8 million in help for Shaw University. St. Augustine, $8.1 million. Johnson C. Smith, $14.3 million. I want to go with you when you meet those chancellors and tell them you voted against this budget, that you voted not to give them this increase. Chairman Fairclough had a discussion about Guilford College. Guilford College is suffering. We don't know if Guilford College, quite frankly, is going to make it. We don't know if they're going to make it. This budget has $1.9 million for Guilford College. I don't want to send him up there and tell him we're not going to be able to give you this help that you desperately need. $500 million for small businesses, especially in the hospitality industry. We all have hospitality industries. We all have ballparks. Winston & Dash in my area, they didn't play last year. Somebody's paying the bills. We need to help these individual organizations. There's $200 million for workforce housing and loan program. I'm proud to say Winston-Salem has $10 million. I don't want to call the mayor and say, you're not going to get that $10 million. I want to be able to call him and say, we're honored and proud to be able to help the people in my county and my city that needs help. $200 million in workforce housing. Now, maybe we'll work this through, and maybe we'll get it approved, and that might be October, November. This money's going to all be delayed. It's going to be delayed, even if we work and get it done. $117 million to clean up lead paint in our schools. That's an issue in my district. $30 million for a new veterans skilled nursing facility right here in Wake County. It's not a Republican district. There's nothing about these dollars that we're allocating that's Republican-Democrat dollars. These are North Carolina, these are our taxpaying dollars that are going out to those who need help. $2 million increase in scholarships for eligible children of disabled veterans. I don't want to tell those vets where they need this help for their children. Even our volunteer fire departments, incredible work that they do on a voluntary basis, $5 million. Grants to every single voluntary fire department in this state is going to get help in this budget. I don't want to tell them no. I don't like telling no to some of my colleagues. I've had to tell them no. We can't do all this. But these are good things. There's $500,000 in here for each of your counties for school districts to help with repair and renovations. Now, I'm not going to go through all this and bore you with those kind of statistics. I understand political rhetoric. I've been a politician for a long time. I tell my wife all the time, I'm not a politician. She says, yes, you are. You've been in politics for 28 years. I guess I'm a politician. But I look at the facts, I look at the needs, and I look at what helps people. When Speaker Tillis recruited me to come down here, he said, what do you want to accomplish? I want to help people. I want to come down here and help people. That's why we're here. I happen to be a Republican, and I'm proud of that. But I came down here because I want to help people. And if I don't leave here at some point and walk away and say, I helped as many people as I could, I'm a failure. And I understand that you're under a lot of pressure to vote no. I understand it. I get it. I wonder what would I do if I was in your situation. And I come back to a basic principle that this isn't a perfect budget. There's things I would like in it. There's things I don't like. But I cannot turn my back on millions of people who need help in North Carolina, that we're either going to delay it while we work through a process. We need to give the Speaker as many yes votes as we can to help in our negotiations. That's the bottom line. We can deal with what the next cycle is, but if we don't give him the tools he needs, you're going to see more Senate stuff in here than you would like, than I would like. We need to fight for the House budget. It's not perfect, but it's a really good budget. It is historical. We have never, ever, in fact, if you're here for 10 more years, you may never get the chance that we have today to pass this budget, to get this money out, to hopefully negotiate with the Senate and get it out of the conference committee short time to get these monies flowing. I certainly don't want to be here in December working on the budget, but that looks like where we might be.
Representative Lamp, the gentleman has about 20 seconds to wrap up.
I encourage you to vote yes. I hope you vote yes. But bottom line is I appreciate what you do for the people in your district. Thank you.
Members, we're going to take a few amendments. Representative Davis is recognized to send forth Amendment AMQ 41. The clerk will read.
Representative Davis moves to amend the bill on page 586, lines 2 through 3, by inserting between those lines the following language to read.
Chairman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, this is an amendment that is technical in nature. It simply replaces the original words of in New Hanover County with by the North Carolina National Guard Museum Foundation. I ask for your support.
Further discussion and debate on the amendment. Representative Brown, Chair of CCUI, is this just a debate on the bill? Okay. Question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A-17. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hardister is recognized to send forth Amendment AMK 51. The clerk will read.
Representative Hardister moves to amend the bill on page 29, lines 30 through 42, by deleting those lines.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this does is it removes a provision of the budget that was put in by the Senate. It prevents UNC institutions from charging market rates to other state agencies that utilize their facilities. This will save UNC institutions approximately $10 million a year. Appreciate your support.
Further discussion, debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A-18. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Riddell is recognized to send forth Amendment AMQ 39. The clerk will read.
Representative Riddell moves to amend the bill on page 586, lines 2 to 3, by inserting the lines the following language to read.
Gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Folks, this is real simple. It takes $20,000 from the current appropriation from a nonprofit in Alamance County and gives that $20,000 to another nonprofit in Alamance County that happens to be dealing with reentry issues for those who have been incarcerated. Would ask for your green vote.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House, the adoption of Amendment A-19. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lofton recognized and forth amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Lofton moves to amend the bill on page 39, line 38, through page 41, line 3, by deleting those lines.
Gentlemen, recognized. Debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, in addition to the concerns that were raised yesterday in terms of not taking advantage of the moment that we're in, and in fact not meeting the moment that we're in to help as many North Carolinians as possible, this budget contains a number of policy provisions that are harmful to our state. We offered a version of this amendment yesterday. It was ruled out of order because it contained policy provisions. So this version simply seeks to be consistent with that and strike some of the most harmful policy positions from the budget as it stands. And some of those provisions include taking away the governor's authority on executive orders during emergencies like we're in right now, which of course we all know is dangerous to the health and welfare of our state. Taking away the attorney general's authority to enter into settlements and putting constraints on that, which again is not only a policy provision, but possibly unconstitutional. taking away the Attorney General's authority to file amicus briefs in cases, which again is not only a policy provision but possibly unconstitutional. Micromanaging our teachers by requiring them to post their lesson plans online and open up public hearings, which again is a policy provision and introduces politics into our classrooms. It also interferes with our local governments, with their authority to regulate trees in our cities and billboards. Again, these policy provisions in this budget do not belong in an appropriations bill and are harmful to our state, and I urge everyone to vote for this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Shane Rice?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speak on the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Mr. Speaker, I'll be brief. I'll just urge members to vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wilkes, Representative Elmore Rice?
I think it was sufficient from Chairman Sain. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Austin, rise?
To debate the amendment.
He has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to comment briefly on the portion related to the provisions on the exercise of the governor's powers and the attorney general. Like my colleague mentioned, this amendment removes the provisions that, in my mind, violate our Constitution and our separation of powers. My colleagues have spoken on this issue yesterday, spoke to the underlying provision, so I'll just reiterate that the bill intrudes on the duties of the Attorney General. It would tie the hands of our AG. It expressly shifts power from that agency to this body. And those are powers that our AG or Attorney General should reasonably and strategically exercise. It would jeopardize the fairness of our elections and our ability to respond to emergencies. And, you know, again, I won't belabor this point. We've seen dozens of bills on these issues. We've debated them quite a bit. So I just want to reiterate that this is bad policy. These are powers and authority that our Attorney General and our Governor should hold and that our Constitution contemplates. These are changes that threaten our ability to protect the rights of our citizens and are, in fact, dangerous, and they should not be in this bill. So thank you. I encourage you to vote for the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Thank you. To speak on the amendment.
Lady has the floor.
And a couple other provisions contained in this amendment that I think we have concerns about, and is the deletion of the provision on school safety threat assessment teams. That this is four pages of the bill. It's about policy. It's about creating school safety threat teams for kids who could pose a danger. And there doesn't have to be any direct verbal communication, but it just identifies, calls out kids that might pose a danger. And a team looks at them. And are they low risk, medium risk, high risk? And what can we do with these kids? I mean, we're supposed to be educating these kids. We're not supposed to be big brother watching and look out, oh, what children might pose a danger that deserve this threat assessment team? I think we need to think about this a lot more before we do that and concentrate on educating our children. Another provision in this policy is looking at the language on long-term suspensions. This body has worked a long time on codes of student conduct. In 2011, we improved it, but this bill takes us backwards again because it says minor violations, dress code, disruptive behavior, bad language could get a child long-term suspended from school. That's 2 weeks out of school. And the facts show 25% of our enrolled children in our public schools are black, and yet they account for 55% of long-term suspensions. Let's not increase that disparity. Let's work to help these kids, not get them out of school onto the streets for further possibly bad behavior. These are two provisions in this amendment that I think are good. They're policy. Let's take them out and let's get a better budget bill. Please support the amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
Speak to the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
These examples that Representative Lofton has pointed out so astutely is exactly what makes this budget difficult for me. I was told there's a rule, and I think Greer Martin, he's a rules expert on our side, pointed out Rule 36, which forbids policy to be in the budget bills. And these are five or six clear examples of policy coming in. And I'm a judge. I'm an old judge. And I think what's fair for the geese, fair for the gander. And I know people have the power to just push it on through when it's Republican policy and bang it out when it's, keep it out when it's Democratic policy, but it shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't. And so I think these are examples. Every last one that's been pointed out in these requested amendments to eliminate that from the budget bill. There's a place for it, but not at this time. That's where I understand it as a guy who's been up here 8 months. And I certainly am no expert on the rules. But so I speak to support these amendments by Rep. Lofton. I think he's dead on point. And I think those on the other side of the aisle should look at carefully what he's done. He carefully went through and identified these spots in the budget. They're in there. They need to come out. That's all. It's that simple. Thank you very much.
For what purpose, the lady from Guilford. Representative Harrison, rise.
Briefly debate the amendment.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to belabor the points that I made yesterday, but several of the items, the policy provisions that I mentioned yesterday, are included in Representative Lofton's amendment. And the problem with these are all substantive policy changes, and most of them have their own bill, and they should just be debated on separately and not included in the bill. But most of them have pretty significant constraints, impose very significant constraints on local government's ability to handle specific issues related to, as he mentioned, trees, stormwater control, riparian buffers, and billboards. The other one relates to dam safety. This could be a dangerous exemption that we're creating in our statute. The Smithfield Agreement, money that's being shifted around to the rest of the state instead of being focused on eastern North Carolina, and it was set up in place to deal with the hog industry and the waste problem associated with the hog industry, an agreement with the hog industry and the Attorney General at the time. So I would just encourage you to support these. There are a number of policy provisions. Maybe they have merit, but they ought to not be part of the budget. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise.
Speak on the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. I'd like to specifically address some comments that were made toward the threat assessment team. Ladies and gentlemen, if you actually understand what the threat assessment team does, that's sponsored and brought on from the U.S. Secret Service, who do nothing but threat assess every day, all the time. It's designed to help children that might be contemplating harming themselves or harming others. It's designed to help those individuals to take them to a much better place. Now, if you don't think that's important, then by all means support what they're talking about. The other one, very simply, talking about some of the long-term suspensions in schools, the language of what we have in the bill has absolutely nothing to do with whether suspensions will go up or suspensions will go down. That is only and specifically determined by the principal of a school. So there's a little, chalk it up to not reading the bill in its entirety and not fully understand school safety. I want to enlighten the membership on those. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
To speak on the amendment.
The gentleman has four.
Members, I've heard it repeatedly said on the other side of the aisle that you want support and you want our side of the aisle to vote for the budget. This is one of the big stumbling blocks that prevents a lot of folks that otherwise would vote for this budget not voting for the budget. I would ask you if you want to take certain parts of it out, as Representative Torbett pointed out, that's okay. But if you genuinely want a united budget, this is a good amendment that takes substantive provisions out of the budget and allows people to vote on the budget. And I would sincerely ask you to consider voting for this amendment.
For what purpose, gentleman from Wayne, Representative Smith, rise.
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
I've sat here quietly for the most part, and I've listened repeatedly to individuals tout and proclaim wonderful things that are in this budget, especially when it comes to HBCUs. I'm a triple HBCU graduate. my undergraduate in supply chain management from A&T State University here in North Carolina, my master's in public administration from North Carolina Central University here in the state of North Carolina, and my doctorate in education leadership from Fayetteville State University right here in North Carolina. So I think I have a little bit to say about what's going on at HBCUs. But I will tell you this. The one thing that I can't sit here and just let you continue to say is how great what you're doing for HBCUs is without reminding you that the reason that they're in the condition that they're in now is because of years of neglect by this body. They wouldn't be in the bad shape that they are had we been investing in them like we should have been all along. So I will tell you, like my father told me when I came home with my first A, you're only doing what you're supposed to do. We're not going to jump up and down because you brought home an A. I send you to school to make A's, okay? And what you're doing, investing in the HBCUs, is nothing more than what you should have been doing all along. While I thank you for it, I'm not going to jump up and down about it because it's what you should have been doing. But now, as far as the budget is concerned, if you are truly sincere, and the speaker called me by name yesterday, thank you for shouting out, shout out, Mr. Speaker. But if you're truly sincere about unanimity on this budget, take what we're saying to you into consideration. It will bring us one step closer to that unanimity that you claim that you seek. So shooting down the one budget, one amendment that you would allow us to bring to the floor, shoot it down, and then turn around and say, we want a unanimous vote, that's not sincere. That is not sincere at all. So if you're truly sincere, like Representative Richardson said, let's talk about these provisions. Let's talk about the ones you want to leave in, but let's talk. But right now, I'm not jumping up and down. And yes, I will gladly tell my HBCUs that I voted against a budget that would take us back rather than move us forward. I have no problem with it. And I can stand here and say that. So again, if you're truly sincere, let's talk about this particular provision. Let's talk about this amendment and let's pass something from this side of the aisle and then say we tried to work together. Thank you.
What purpose, gentleman from Robson? Representative Graham Rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speak on the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speakers and members, I rise in support of this amendment for a number of reasons, and I'll just be brief. I do believe that these provisions need to be vetted. They need to go through a committee process. That's what we're here for. We all take pride in serving and doing work in our committees. I see there's some pretty strong language in here surrounding education here in this state, agriculture, natural resources, and transportation. I like bipartisanship. I've always supported bipartisanship. And if we want a budget that demonstrates strong bipartisanship, I would strongly encourage you to reconsider your thinking on this, and let's go back to our committees and do some work. I have no problem with that. As a matter of fact, I would enjoy doing that. I think we all enjoy our committee work, and this is an opportunity to listen to our constituents and let the process work. And I would encourage you to support this amendment. And in that regard, it would show that we're here working in a bipartisan way, and that we're committed to answering to our constituents, and we want to hear their voices through a committee process. So I would just encourage you to let's support this amendment, and let's have a good vote and work with the Senate. Thank you, and I would encourage you to vote green on this amendment. Thank you.
For our purpose, the lady from Wake. Representative Badcock rise.
To debate the amendment.
Lady has floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to ask you to vote in favor of the amendment. There are lots of good reasons have been given. I want to give you another one. And that is, this amendment gives the governor the powers he needs in a medical emergency like we've had in the last, 17 months with the pandemic. You know, when this pandemic started in March of last year, I was still leading a large family practice, and we were making changes literally every day based on CDC best advice, based on what our own Department of Health and Human Services was advising in congruence with that advice. And we leaned on these leaders to help us know how to best protect not just my staff of 68, but the patients that we continue to see, not just for COVID, but for their other acute care problems and for the management of their chronic diseases, for their nutritional needs, for their physical therapy, for all of the things they came to us for. And it frightens me to think about a state where the governor, where one person who has, with consultation with healthcare experts, does not have the power to keep the citizens of his or her state completely safe, because at the end of the day, you cannot make these kinds of decisions by committee. I was having to make decisions for my practice every day in consultation with my staff and with healthcare experts, but at the end of the day, someone has to be responsible. The governor is elected statewide. He or she is given that responsibility, and we need to do nothing as a body that detracts from that or weakens it in any way. I worry about the public health of our state if we do that, and therefore I ask you to please support this amendment and vote green. Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Lucas, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thus far, I've sat silently by. I don't think I've spoken at all on the budget, but I must speak now or forever hold my peace. I don't choose to hold peace when it comes to crisis. Pandemic is a crisis. It's not politics. It doesn't care whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, or whether you're an agnostic, or whether you're nothing. It will attack you. That's a real emergency. The chief elected official in this state is the governor. I would hope that we would not be myopic enough to tie his hands when we have an emergency. So let's pass this amendment, please.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, rise?
Speak to the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Colleagues, there's, you know, trying to read through, this is a four-page amendment, and I'm sitting here trying to read parts of it, and there's, frankly, there's some things in there I agree with. But what my point in rising, though, is to address everybody else here, regardless of your party. If you have an amendment with this much substantive stuff in it, my request would be, in the future, you circulate that, socialize that, if you can, and give us time. I mean, there's sections in here, page 3 and page 4, where we're deleting a lot of lines, and I don't know what that deletes. And I can't go back and forth. I don't have the 700-page bill here. I can go ahead and look at that. But so I can't seriously consider voting for it because I don't know what I'd be voting for or what I'd be deleting. But I would just suggest that we, in the future, regardless who you are, if you have a bill with or amendment with this much substantive material in it, that you circulate that prior to the committee you're going to or the floor. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Autry, rise?
To speak to the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor.
I appreciate the representative's comments about the complexity of this four-page amendment, and I would just like to reiterate the complexity of dealing with a document that's over 600 pages long, trying to digest that same information, and then come into this chamber and make decisions about the people of North Carolina. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin Rice?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Members, I also want to address the gentleman from Rowan's
point. Yeah, it is difficult to go through an amendment that's four pages that references a 600-page document, but that is the same position that we've been put in reading that big of a document very, very short notice. Now, I've been here 15 years, and I've seen actually worse processes where when y'all were in the minority, Democrats required y'all to read a big budget document overnight. And one of the good things that Republicans have done is to increase the amount of time. Unfortunately, in that time period, though, we've had a process by which conference is no longer limited to matters in dispute between the houses. So the amount of time we have to read the budget really, even though it's increased, is really not in the end done all that much good. So yeah, I agree we should have more time to process amendments like the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Lofton's amendment, but at the same time we in the minority should have a lot more time to read a complicated budget document, and we should have had time in the subcommittees to actually offer up amendments there. So let's see if we can all do better regardless of who's in charge. And, Mr. Speaker, while I've got the floor, could we have a recorded vote on this amendment, please?
I will. I can tell this will be one that...
Thank you, sir.
So. Yeah. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
Speak to this a second time, if I may.
The gentleman has the floor.
I just want to... I'm an old judge, so I'm just going to boil it down to this. The only issue raised by Representative Lofton's motion is to eliminate from this bill, which is supposed to be a budget bill, policy statements. That's it. So to speak to what the gentleman up here said, I can't get his name, I don't think you need to read through everything. I don't think he would misrepresent to you that it is strictly policy. I know him as a man of integrity and a person who is very smart, and he went through and carefully crafted out the policy so we can vote on a pure budget bill. And I wanted to say to my fellow freshman Republicans, I know most of you because I went to dinner with you, I like you, I'm glad I'm in this class, I hope to be around a while, but we're new. This is the kind of thing we need to stop doing in the General Assembly. That's the way it's done. You know, mixing apples and oranges and all that. We don't have to go along with this. This is not right. This is not a good way to do business. And maybe they've been doing it for years. I don't know. But I think to eliminate this policy out of this bill is not going to hurt anybody, because there's plenty of time down the road to have a pure bill on policy and go straight at it and debate it up or down and vote. So I think that's the only point of Representative Lofton's amendment. Thank you very much for letting me speak twice.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment from Representative Lofton. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A-20. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Warren wish to record? Representative Dahl wish to record? Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 51 having voted in the affirmative, 60 in the negative, the amendment fails. Representative Lambeth is recognized to send forth amendment AMM 22. The clerk will read.
Representative Lambeth moves to amend the bill on page 11, line 13, through page 12, line 4 to 3, by deleting those lines.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is very technical. In the budget manual, there's a duplication of a section on page 11 that we're just simply duplicating it. It exists in a few pages earlier. And then there was a correction of a number that was typed up incorrectly. Staff recommended these changes. Again, pure technical. Ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House, adoption of amendment A-21. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Members, we have taken up all of the amendments, so now would be appropriate to go to debate on the bill. So any members planning to debate, I would ask to go ahead and get in the queue, and we'll work through those. The gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Harris, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was
I was going to do this yesterday, and I know to the dismay of everyone in this body, we didn't get a good chance to talk about the financial package, but I thought the debate was already getting a little too taxing yesterday, so I decided to wait till today, because it is a new day. And I know it's a new day because actually my prepared remarks, the first thing I was going to say yesterday was, I agree with most of the things Representative Lambeth said to start this debate, but I don't feel that way today. You know, I love America and I love North Carolina and you know, that love comes from the American dream. And that American dream is that regardless of the status of your birth, your possibilities are limitless here. In other words, I love America because of opportunity. And opportunity is absolutely everything. But opportunity isn't free. And it's not guaranteed. And so the duty of this body is to ensure that everyone in North Carolina, that we are delivering that opportunity to everybody. So let's talk taxes. Unfortunately, the tax policies in this budget don't rise to the occasion of the real opportunities in the moment that we're in right now. The tax proposal proposed in this budget will reduce our revenues by over $8.6 billion in the next 5 years. And I'll even give you the first year. You know, as Representative Zoka said, most of the first year cost is bills we've already voted on. And so, excluding this year, it's going to cost over $7 billion in those previous four years. And we have to remind ourselves, that's assuming nothing bad happens, like a recession. And so from the perspective from our state's coffers and our state's financial position, you know, we were actually incredibly lucky that the pandemic didn't have a bigger impact. And we are in a much better position than even I hoped for. But like I said, a lot of it is luck. You know, we're lucky that the federal aid came through. And that helped us out a lot. We're lucky that the pandemic didn't really hurt our high income earners and didn't really disrupt their day-to-day jobs. And so our income tax revenues didn't really hurt. And we're also lucky that the Supreme Court came down with the Wayfair decision, which allowed taxing for internet sales tax, which again, this body passed last year. And so when everyone shifted from brick and mortar stores during the pandemic to buying things online, we were able to capture that tax revenue. And so our sales tax revenue didn't really fall. And so we've heard a lot of how the tax policies in the past 10 years have laid the foundation for where we are right now. But we have to think about this. You know, when we look at, say, okay, well, look how good financial we are. That's because of our tax decisions. But the state that was in almost equally good position as us was California. And I often hear from across the aisle how their tax policies are absolutely miserable. Versus when we look at other conservative states like Florida, they were suffering. And so it's just a combination of all those things I mentioned before, plus the mix of our industries, that they weren't really hurt. And we got to think to ourselves, where did those industries come from? Our status as a financial sector did not start in 2010. Our status as a healthcare and IT leader in Research Triangle Park did not start in 2010. Hearing the debate yesterday about these tax policies, it's almost as if we were this third world smoldering wreckage. In 2010, the clouds parsed, and Tom Tillis appears holding these tax cuts to rescue us all. But that's not true. We were in good shape before because we invested in our people for decades. Tax cuts didn't build RTP. Tax cuts did not transfer us into the second largest financial sector in the country. And I know the Great Recession hit us hard. It was a financial crisis. And we were the second largest financial banking system in the country. And so it's going to hit us hard. And so our recovery was always going to be tough. But what our pandemic has revealed in these past couple years was that there were a multitude of structural flaws in our system. And with the help of some of our reserves and the federal aid, we've been able to plug some of these holes. But for us to be able to weather the potential storms coming up, we have to take this opportunity to make long-term, lasting investments in the foundation of our economy so that we can not only continue the high living standards of a lot of the people in our state, but also make that sustainable. And sustainability is the biggest thing. You know, I hate taxes. Who does like taxes? I hate paying them. I hate doing a lot of things. I hate paying my bills, too. But I like air conditioning and like cable. But I also hate driving around my district and seeing schools that are bursting at the seams, but my county government simply not even having enough money to pay for the land for new schools. And I hate driving through the downtrodden parts of Charlotte, seeing people so unbelievably close to the epicenter of economic growth and wealth in our state and not being able to grasp it. And I hate driving back to my old original hometown of Alexander County, from Taylorsville originally, and seeing this small rural community that's being left behind by globalization, technology, and even our state. These parts of our state have been aching for investments to give their communities a chance at the future. And I wish our tax cut philosophy works. No one more than me wishes that the trickle-down economic, the supply-side economics works. And while the anecdotal evidence and rankings from Forbes and CNBC suggest that we're number one in the country for business in terms of states, you know, the long-term data just doesn't back that up. Those rankings suffer from the same kind of long-term flaw that our current corporate outlook looks like, where they're only looking towards the next quarterly report. They're only looking and saying, what do we need to do to make sure our stock price is rising in the next quarter? And that's not the decisions we need to be making. Just go back to the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and how they rank how our priorities have changed. You know, we went from the middle of the pack to number two a couple years ago. Followed all their restrictions, lowered our tax rates, lowered regulation, did what we were supposed to do. And then they also have a growth record of how is that performance actually being realized 5 years later, 10 years later. And we are still middle of the pack. You know who's number one? California. And when we look at what we've done in this state in the past 10 years, we've gone from the high of our neighbors, we've gone from the highest personal income tax to the lowest, aside from Tennessee, who had zero and remains at zero. And in corporate, we went from by far the highest corporate income tax to the lowest, to by far the lowest. South Carolina is more than double the corporate income tax than us. But what have been those benefits? Well, during that time period, we've grown slower than the United States as a whole. And that's not just, well, we had a big hole to dig out of from the Great Recession. Well, that means we should have been growing faster. That's catch-up growth. But from 2008 to 2018, grew slower than the country. 2015 to 2018, grew slower than the country. Even 2018, we grew slower. Where did I get those numbers? John Locke. Their foundation gave us those numbers. We've grown slower than Georgia. We've grown slower than Tennessee. And dear God, we've grown slower than South Carolina. And so we talk a lot about funding, and we put a lot of money in this budget. But the reality is, and then we can still do a ton more. We can still do so much more. And that even after the amendments we tried to process yesterday, even after that, we would have had $2.8 billion in reserves. That's this year. You know, the reserves this year becomes the starting point for next year. And the reserves next year would have been about $1.9 billion. That's almost a $1 billion difference. And so it doesn't take a great deal of quantitative insight to see that that is a rapidly decreasing number. And I think everyone could agree with this budget that we made investments we needed to make. And we want to be able to continue to make those investments. But we also need to realize we were dealing with unprecedented amount of money from the federal government, from the fact that we did not have a budget last year. And so our ability to maintain that level of spending is going to be threatened. Which is why I am so hesitant and so worried about these tax cuts that we're providing. Not only is that it's going to enable our ability to continue the investments that we should be making, but that the tax cuts don't seem to be delivering what we're promising. And what it does do is it continues to put more pressure on our local governments, who have quite a bit fewer levers they can pull in terms of revenue. Over the past 10 years, county property taxes across the state per capita, per person, have gone up over 26%. Tax raises. Because they're having to fund things that our state should be funding. My home county, Mecklenburg County, over 20% of our $2 billion budget goes to education and health care. That's operating expenses, things the state should be covering. Wake County is 26%. Durham County, it's 33%. So I don't have any numbers for the more redder counties. I don't have any colleagues in there to get those numbers for me. But it puts that pressure, and then our wealthier counties, like Mecklenburg, are able to do that. In terms of actual county property tax increases, Mecklenburg's at the lower end of the barrel. Looking around Mecklenburg, Iredell County, 33% increase in property taxes. Alexander County, 37%. Gaston County, 31%. Cabarrus County, 41%. And what this does is it even furthers the urban-rural divide that we've been dealing with here. And the state is the only body that can really help that. And so when we look at our big and wealthy counties, we can somewhat survive. But, you know, when you look at Charlotte and the Triad and the Triangle, as we continue, as and I think everyone can agree, as they continue to become more regional powers, they simply do not have the tax base to invest in what they need, especially when most of the people who work in that area live in the adjoining counties. And in the same vein, it's our rural areas that are getting hurt the most, because they need these opportunities. They need our help to invest so they can prepare their communities for the future. And that's why since I've gotten here, I've screamed for a statewide school bond, which I know is going to disproportionately benefit rural areas. Because that's why that's how statewide spending works. You know, the wealth comes from the wealthy areas and we give it to the areas that need it. Because I know that that is how our growth is going to continue. 66% of our population growth in the past 10 years has come from out of state. You know, to say, what's the best way to build a sports team? Not through free agency. You do it through the draft. You homegrow your own talent. And I feel that we are relying on other states to provide the talent that we need. Again, when we look at the economic growth in our state, where's it coming to? It's coming to our large urban centers. And we're the ones who are saying we do not need to cut taxes. Again, I worked in tax planning. I talked to CEOs. I talked to my old partners at Ernst & Young, you know. We say, like, you know, after the federal government came out with what's called base erosion and profit shifting regulations, where you can no longer have shell corporations to store your taxes, you have to have what's called boots on the ground. People have to want to live where they're located, where the business is located. And once that happened, the priority of tax planning plummeted. Because you want good communities. You need workers. Your workers want good schools. Your workers want clean air. Your workers want good transportation. They don't want traffic. They want affordable housing. And we have the ability to deliver that for everybody. Everybody. And sustain it. And the real worrisome thing about this tax package is a lot of it, the corporate income tax falls, the income, big income tax falls, they don't even hit for a couple years after this biennium. And so it looks like we can easily fund everything we want to fund. But then the taxes are going to hit. And so we got to look at ourselves and say, are we providing the opportunity we need to for our state? No, we're not doing good enough. And so we can afford to do better. We can afford to do better today. We have the funds to. And we can afford to make that sustainable. Again, the biggest threat to our capitalist system is the lack of opportunity. Lack of opportunity and feeling left behind is dangerous. That's what's causing the great divide in our politics right now. That's what's causing the urban-rural divide. And we have the ability to come together. There's rural poor, there's urban poor. And demagoguery can pull them in different ways, and it leads to the politics of hate. But we have the ability to end that. We have the ability to bring that together. But we got to invest in our people. And we got to keep investing in our people. So please, vote against this budget. Let's get one that works for everybody.
Gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Zoka, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My pen ran out of ink here. I was taking so many notes on that. So let me just slow down the pace a little bit, and let's take a trip back in history to see where this, so we know why this tax package fits exactly well into the budget, and it accomplishes the thing that my good friend Representative Harris was, I think he's trying to get to, but he's a little confused on some things. So let's go back to the year 2000 through 2010. Those legislatures at that time were spending more than the rate of inflation and population growth. And the proof of that is when trouble hit in the Great Recession, they didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough money. Where'd they get the money from? They went to every fee-supported agency, emptied their coffers to put it in the general fund. They laid teachers, they didn't lay teachers off. They gave them furloughs, unpaid furloughs, mandatory unpaid furloughs. State workers as well. If that's a sign of good tax policy, I'm on the wrong side. I just don't get it. 2010, there was a structural deficit in the budget. I mean, the problem we have right now is that we're trying to give people back money in terms of tax reductions, and at the same time what we're doing is we're balancing that with sound spending. That's a good problem to have. We didn't have the problem that they had in 2000, 2010 when they were spending too much and couldn't figure out how to get it. So 2010, $2 billion structural deficit. Now, my numbers might be a little bit off because I'm doing this from memory. There was the unemployment, the long-term unemployment compensation that was owed to the federal government. And right over here, well, where she sits, Julie Howard, right there, Representative Howard, did a great job at figuring out how to get that paid back to the federal government. That was owed by businesses, guys. We paid that off early, saved businesses over hundreds, actually millions of dollars in paying it back early. Somebody here mentioned earlier that there were no no teacher pay increases during that period of time in the late 2010s. Who got them the first teacher pay raises? We did it through good fiscal policy. Not by spending every penny that comes into the Treasury and then saying, I wish I had more. Yeah, one of the criticisms I heard here was, what are we going to do for the next big disaster that comes? Well, folks, I think we've had a heck of a lot of disasters. We had the Great Recession. We came out of that. We've had two major hurricanes that, because we did build up our reserves, we were able to weather both of those. And now, I heard yesterday that we're going to be at the, where we're supposed to be. It's never the max. You can always save more, but we're there at the statutory level. We've had wildfires in the western part of the state. We've had localized flooding all across the state. Throughout all of this, in the last decade, this legislature has been able to give aid where aid is needed, whether it was wildfires in the west, whether it was hurricanes in the east, whether it was pandemic. And yes, did some of the pandemic money come from the federal government? Absolutely. But we are not California. They are not in a better shape than we are. I can tell you that. I don't care what statistics, and I do have a master's degree in statistics. Let me just add that. So anybody can make numbers dance around how you want, but let's go with the facts. We're not California. They're losing congressional seats because people are moving out. And the gentleman from Mecklenburg mentioned that 66% of our income, or I forget exactly how he said, but we got a lot of people come from out of state. Why are they coming here? They're coming here because they see something that they want for their personal lives and for their businesses. They see a state that is run by people who have sound fiscal policy, and they know they're not going to get taxed to death. I have friends across the nation. I have friends in California who know, some of them surprisingly, not surprisingly, moving here. They're going to Idaho. They're going to Wyoming. I got friends in Illinois. They called me just last week and said, oh, we really need to move. And I said, well, you know, I'm in the residential mortgage business. Come on down. People move here for a reason. It's not random, and it sure as heck is not luck. We haven't been lucky. You know, you build your own luck. If it was that easy to be lucky, I'd go over to the lottery, gas station, buy a ticket, and be a millionaire tomorrow. That's luck. That's luck. This is not luck. This is hard work over a decade of hard work that has made sense of things that looks out for every citizen, every single citizen, no matter their level of income, no matter their party, no matter their race, no matter anything. And if you look at what we did here, and I mentioned this yesterday, but apparently I need to mention it again, when we reduced the tax to 4.99 from 5.25, that helps everybody. But what really helps people at the lower end of the economic scale is by increasing the standard deduction. It just does. I did this on the back of a sheet because I'm kind of a math guy. But in the latest reduction, by raising the standard deduction for people at the poverty level, which is $26,500, their total tax burden for income tax, personal income tax, is going to be $49.50. What was that same person's tax burden back in 2010? I'll tell you what it was. It was $1,230. So you tell me tax policy that we come up with doesn't work for people at the lower end of the economic scale? You know, I mean, everybody can do that math in their head. I mean, that's a total reduction of $1,181 over the last 10 years by targeted tax reductions and by increasing the standard deduction, or as I like to call it, the zero income tax bracket. You know, I don't know. I could go on and on and on, and sometimes I've been accused of that, so I'm not going to do that here today. But as the gentleman from Mecklenburg pointed out, he did vote for almost $1 billion in taxes in this tax package. You know, he voted, well, the vote was 114-1 on the pandemic-related provisions, which was $860 million. Some of the other, you know, House Bill 83, 105-5. I mean, you know, I guess it's good for us to have these kind of discussions every once in a while so that people can make their points for back in a district, and that's, I'm fine with that. But, folks, I'm not doing it for people back in my district. They knew who I am, and they can keep me or get rid of me. That's fine. You know, that's what elections are for. But when it comes to the job that we're doing here, our job is to look out for every citizen of the state of North Carolina, no matter how rich, no matter how poor, no matter what color they are, no matter where they grew up, no matter what kind of house they live in. This budget and this tax package has benefits for every single citizen at every level of their economic income. This tax package helps people out at the lower end of the scale way more than it helps the millionaires and billionaires, and I'm surprised I haven't heard that in the last couple days. We are focused on doing the right thing to help every citizen of this state, and I can guarantee you it hasn't been by luck that we got to where we are now. It's been by sound fiscal policy supported by reasonable targeted spending. You can't have one without the other. If you want to see what that looks like, go look at Kansas a couple years ago. They cut taxes, but they didn't control their spending. I've been to various states along with other members of the General Assembly here, talking to other legislators, Arkansas, Louisiana, Wisconsin, New York. You know, how'd you guys do it in North Carolina? We want to be like you. We want to be like you. Why do you get all these ratings? Why are you getting our companies coming to your state? And I tell them just what I told you. Sound fiscal policy by restrained spending. And they go, oh, man, I thought there was some magic formula. I talked to a legislator in New York a couple months ago. He said, we can't do that. I said, well, then you're not going to be like North Carolina. You're going to be like you have been for decades, and you're going to have problems, and you're going to have confiscatory rates of tax for property, for income, for everything else. And that's, my friends, why people are leaving the state of New York and California and Illinois, all these other high-tax states. And that's why they're coming here. And it wasn't by luck that we got to here. It's by hard work and by sound fiscal policy, targeted, restrained spending. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, arise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you everyone that put so much work into this budget. As I say often, I respect my colleagues because all of us are making the same sacrifice. We're away from our families. We are taking time from jobs, our communities, to serve the great state of North Carolina. Right? And that's commendable. Now, we disagree clearly on the direction of this budget and the investments made in our shared state, but at the end of the day, we respect the work that you do and hope that, as my colleague Gail Adcock said, that you understand that our reflection and suggestions are just a part of the process. They are suggestions so that as we look towards moving into conference, that these things, from our perspective, from our constituents, from the Democratic side, are considered to make this a better budget. Because I think, as Representative Lambert was talking about, you know, a reflective budget is an inclusive budget, right? If we want to be reflective of the 10.5 million people in North Carolina, that means we have to make sure that we include
Democrats. We have to include Governor Cooper. Because I, you know, when I ran for this office, I said I believed in a better North Carolina. And that means that anybody from anywhere has the ability to maximize their abilities, their God-given abilities in the great state of North Carolina. They can grow up and stay in North Carolina and be successful in North Carolina. And this budget, you know, falls a little short of that. And, you know, before I get started on the breadth of my comments, some of the debate that I've heard reminds me of what Bill Friday said, paraphrasing. He said that millions of people get up and work poverty wages, right, so that we subsidize education, we subsidize different things. They work to make sure that the North Carolina that we see now happens, and so our job is to invest back in them. Because what happens and what we see is that so many people are not having the opportunity to take part in the North Carolina dream. They're not. They don't see it as a better North Carolina. They don't see the ability to take part in all that we share and all that has been discussed. And so our job in this budget, this unprecedented budget, this ability to take unprecedented resources, to have that at our disposal is what we're supposed to do, and we should be able to invest back in them. And there, I've outlined a few ways that, you know, this budget, and for consideration as we go to conference, you know, ways that we can do that. I think first, and I'll stay on the education train, is historically black colleges. HBCUs, I want to say thank you for those who have. I, you know, have authored most bills on HBCUs and our universities in this session and previous. It's a passion of mine. It's something, education is something that I believe is an important part of who we are. Speaking of representative, why people come to North Carolina, it's not because of tax policy. They've been coming to North Carolina. They come because of partly because of our universities and the diversity that we bring. I'll say confidently that I represent Research Triangle Park. Pound for pound, the economic engine of the great state of North Carolina. We bring in people from all over the world because of the company, because of the ingenuity and the innovation that was put forth years and years ago. It is growing because of that, and I talk to them frequently. None of them have asked for tax policy. None of them see the benefit in those cutting taxes because they understand that it long-term hurts their workforce. And that's what we want to invest in. And so back to HBCUs. So in this budget, though we made some pretty good investments in HBCUs, when we look at the UNC system, for example, we have 6 of the 16 that are HBCUs. That's Winston-Salem State, North Carolina Central, North Carolina A&T, Elizabeth City State, including UNCP as an MSI, and Fayetteville State University. That's over a third of the universities that constitute our UNC system, yet only 15% of the appropriated funds for public higher education went to those institutions. Now, the reason that's important is because they provide so much to the state of North Carolina, not only in places like teacher diversity, but in most professions. Most of your professionals who have MDs, law degrees, most of your professionals come from historically black colleges. And most that come to those HBCUs stay in the great state of North Carolina. So the deeper the investment, and all of the companies, to your point, representative from Cumberland County, all of them ask about diversity. Every last one of them. They say that if we can increase the diverse talent pool by investing in HBCUs, we'll hire them. And so the best thing that we can do is to increase that number. And I want to make sure that as we look through the budget, we consider that, increasing that number, so that long term we can increase the diversity of our talent pool and make sure that everybody has an access to talent. The second thing for me is that the reason that that's also problematic is that we have 2 research one, tier one institutions, right? Love them both. But we need more. We have North Carolina A&T, we have North Carolina Central, who are pushing in that direction. We need what's our plan, what's our path to put them on the path of being tier two and tier one research institutions. We cannot, as this state grows, only keep the two that we have. We have to think about the future, and we have to think about that in a diverse fashion. Now, the one another piece of credit that I'll give is that in the capital budget, 28% of the capital spending, and I'm looking at you, Dean, Representative Arp, for that, 28% goes to HBCUs. We need to keep that up. That's reflective of who we are as a state and reflective of the number of HBCUs in our system. One other thing, though, that I saw that I think that we can improve is that this was in the Senate budget, but is current didn't make it over to us, but should be as a consideration, is that in the collaboratory, the research NC collaboratory, they gave money to HBCUs during the pandemic, but in proposing the other budget, proposed to make sure that they had continuous funding for research obligations. This goes back to making sure that we invest in the research enterprise, which is a multi-billion dollar, we have multi-billion dollar research enterprises between our top two tier one institutions, so we need to make sure that we're building the talent and we're building the enterprises of HBCUs. And so I would love to see that in this budget. Secondly, as I continue to talk about education, teacher diversity is something that is near and dear to my heart. I filed bills on it, and I'm so glad that we were able to have two HBCUs and UNC Pembroke be added to the teaching fellows list. That was a win of epic proportions. And but as we look forward, I have yet to see further investment in making sure that those programs are successful. Now, they've been named, but I don't see money that's specifically attached to making sure that they have all the resources that they need to grow their programs. The other piece about teacher diversity that I want to make sure that I speak to is alternative pathways to teaching and recruitment models. Now, we talked about, you know, and I want to say that my colleague from Wake County said that just paying teachers more is not enough. Not enough. That we have to make sure that we put all the steps in place related to Leandro, but also we have to make sure that we're building the teaching profession by building models that will help not only urban areas but rural areas too. And so the current budget does not specifically address ways to support alternative pathways into the teaching profession beyond Teach NC. The governor's proposed budget provides $2.2 million for one research-based Grow Your Own and 2+2 programs in all regions of the state, including high school-based career academic academy programs, the North Carolina Teacher Cadet Program, Teaching as a Profession, TA to Teachers, and Troops to Teachers. Those are proven programs that will help everybody. We all know that one of the greatest things that we can do is find a TA or find a veteran who wants to get into the classroom and create that pathway. Because of the dip in the way that we pay our teachers, we need to go out and recruit them. We need to make sure that we're making it more plentiful, and specifically to teacher diversity, when teachers of diverse backgrounds are in the classroom, all students benefit. And so lastly, I'll go to intellectual and developmental disabilities. I'm so excited that in this budget, we saw the 1,000 innovation waiver slots. That's personally and important. I've filed bills on it and have talked extensively about the ways that we need to address that in the great state of North Carolina. It is a travesty that 15,000 people are waiting. Some, I want to say Representative Insko, told me that she knows people that have been on that list for 10, 12, 15 years. How do you go to sleep at night knowing that that's the case? And so while I'm glad for that, the thing that I have you put forth in HB 966 that did not make it into this budget and I addressed it in appropriations is that we needed to make sure that there is a 10-year stakeholder plan put in place so that we can responsibly eliminate that list, and we need to introduce the option for tiering of those waivers. If you've ever met anybody, anyone on the in the IDD or autism spectrum or someone who needs this waiver, they don't need the entire waiver sometimes just to get their treatment. Sometimes they only need half. Some people need a third. But to keep them on the list and make them have to wait for the full waiver is inhumane in many ways. And it's not only inhumane for them, but for the people who take care of them, the caretakers, the professional caretakers, and their families. And so this is something that if we say that where the weak grow strong and the strong grow great, if we don't address this issue long term, we are failing the people of North Carolina. And I know, as Representative Lambeth said, he comes here and he wants to help people. I believe that of all 120 of us. But this specifically is an issue that I think that we can address. And so I want to again thank my colleagues for all their hard work. The debate that I've seen and I've heard is amazing. This is what it's about. This is what people want to hear. They want to feel respectful back and forth about how we can build a state that we can all be proud of, a better North Carolina. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to these things. And again, I hope that as we look towards reconciliation, as we look to work with the governor and work with Democrats to make this a better bill, that teacher diversity, that HBCUs and our universities, that making sure that we invest in education and that we take care of our most vulnerable citizens is something that we will all keep top of mind. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Robertson, arise?
To speak to the bill. The
gentleman's recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak on the community college piece, especially when it involves salary increases. As many of you know, I'm a former member of the community college. I've worked at Wake Technical Community College for the past 31 and a half years. It has been an eye-opener to be able to realize opportunities for students that would not otherwise have that opportunity. For a lot of these students, this is their last hope. Wake Technical Community College has done some amazing things, as all of our 58 community colleges. Wake Tech is deemed as the largest community college in the state of North Carolina, serving some 70 plus thousand students. These students, when they come to Wake Tech, they have the resources in place to help them succeed and to realize their dreams. When these students leave Wake Tech, they're either transferring to a four-year institution to complete their four-year degree, entering or re-entering the workforce, or starting their own business. That's billions of dollars that are contributing to our local economy. Billions of dollars each year. And so when I look at the salary increases, I appreciate the work that has been done, but it does not go far enough. I am deeply concerned about this great divide where the faculty members are receiving more than the staff members. I would like to share with you all, in my former area, which is instructional support, it consists of our individualized learning center, we call it the ILC for short, library services, e-learning testing, the open computer lab. It's an academic support service. I have worked alongside of these folks for many years, and these folks have worked hard to make sure that students are successful. Case in point, in the individualized learning center, there was a gentleman some years ago that came into the doors of Wake Technical Community College with a 1.9 GPA. He came to me and shared with me his struggles and his deficiency in math. I assured him if he sought out the services in our individualized learning center and was responsible and accountable, we will make sure that he would succeed because the resources are there. By the time he graduated from Wake Tech, he graduated with a 3.8 GPA transferring to NC State. That's just one of many stories, success stories, that these folks do at Wake Tech. Not just instructors, but support staff. So when I see the difference, a 2% for support staff, 3.5 for faculty members, we create this divide that's, in my opinion, that is unfair, and these folks deserve much more. I appreciate the work that you have done. I appreciate the work that you continue to do. I think everyone in this room is impacted by the community college system. We have neighbors. We have friends. We have family members that have been a part of the community college system or that has benefited from the community college system. We can do much better than what we're doing in salary increases for these folks. We have been able to realize wonderful opportunities for the many citizens that we've served. When you go around and you look at some of the businesses and culinary arts, if you go right here in downtown Raleigh, many of these folks, these business owners, are products of the community college system. It is my hope that when we go to conference, that you would reconsider and provide these folks with an adequate salary increase. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Nash, Representative Galliard, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I want to work hard not to repeat a lot of what has already been said. And so I want to focus my comments on the capital portion of this budget bill. I want to begin with a quick recall of an email that I sent to the Capitol Chair asking if we could have a discussion. I appreciate the quick response and the phone call that we had explaining why capital appropriations would not meet. Therein begins to be the problem with this budget. Every person on this floor, those who have chosen not to listen to the debate on this floor, every one of us has a blind spot. There's no exceptions. None of us can really work and walk in the seat of every other person here. I have no idea what it's like to represent Mecklenburg County. I don't know what it's like to be on the coast. Hey, I don't know what it's like to be a woman in childbirth. Thank God for that. I don't know what it's like to walk in the shoes as a white man. None of y'all know what it's like to walk in the shoes of a biracial man. But yet, the budget writers assumed there was no need for diversity of thought. There was no need for inclusion. There was no need to get buy-in from everyone that represents this entire state. Every one of us in this room, no exceptions, has a blind spot. I think it is arrogant, I think it is hypocritical, and I think it is unfair for anyone to think anyone has all the answers. There's no way we can think one party has every answer, whether that's the Democrats or Republicans. There's no way to think one race of people has all the answers. There's no way of thinking that one social demographic or people from a social economic perspective have all the answers. And yet, we've crafted a multi-billion dollar budget with a small set of budget writers who think they have all the answers. This is a flawed process from day one. I live close to Hospira, close to Firestone, it makes tires, close to Rocky Mount Engine Plant that makes diesel engines. It's a manufacturing environment. This is what I know about a manufacturing environment. It's only as good as the product you start with. If they start with flawed rubber, I don't care how good that assembly line rolls, the tire's not going to be good. Well, we started from the beginning with a flawed process. And because of that, what we have in front of us today is a flawed budget. Let me say some things from the capital perspective about this flawed budget. The first thing that I want to bring out is the fact that we would not argue as a body, whether we are Republicans or Democrats, whether we represent rural communities or urban communities, we would not, I don't believe, debate the importance of capital improvements in our state. We could not possibly debate the importance of acquisitions. We can't fight about the obvious realities that we need to spend money on repairs. We need to spend money on renovations. We need to make sure that we're operating in the best, most efficient state-owned facilities that we possibly can. We would never debate that. I don't think that's up for debate. I don't think state capital and debt service is really up for debate. I don't even think broadband as an essential infrastructure is something we would fight about. We might argue whether or not broadband or wastewater is more important. I can tell you, coming from a rural community, many representatives that are on this floor from a rural community, one of the things that we desperately need is workforce housing and low-income housing. And what I can tell you, we have a whole lot of land in our state that has water on it, has natural gas on it, but it doesn't have wastewater on it, doesn't have sewage systems on it. I can build a housing division without broadband. I can't build one without wastewater. What's my point? My point is that this bill does not provide any allowances that the most struggling rural communities in our state will get a fair bite of the apple as it relates to how we build our rural infrastructure. So we create a greater rural-urban divide. This bill in no way shows how we can help the most disenfranchised people in our community. And so I've got some real concerns about how we really pay out all of this infrastructure that we're talking about, broadband, water, wastewater. Who really is going to get the real opportunities here? And then, despite that, there's some questionable aspects of the capital part of the budget, and I want to be fair, and I maybe even should apologize, because had we had a capital appropriations meeting, I could have addressed my concerns, but we were not given that opportunity. So here's some of the concerns. There are aspects of the bill where I'm wondering, well, I see this as being a tribute to SCIF, but maybe this should be highway fund money. I'm looking at how we appropriate for historic sites, and I'm wondering, well, there are a lot of associated nonprofits with these historic sites. How really will this be handled? And then there's some elements of the capital budget that there's some real hairy lines between the distinction of whether or not we're funding capital or whether or not we're funding personnel. Putting all of that aside, the real issues for me, the billions of dollars, $1 billion that we're spending on projects and grants. And here's the concern about spending billions of dollars. It's all non-competitive. It's all whose palm do I want to grease? Who do I want to help? Who's my friend? And I began looking, and I don't doubt whether or not community colleges need to be funded as part of this. I think they should be. I think school districts need to be helped by the state. I think local governments, whether they're counties or municipalities, need to be helped. I think nonprofits, we should come alongside of them, but I do not think we should come alongside of them in a non-competitive way. I thought we were a body that believed that competition was good for innovation, that competition was good for our ability to make sure that we are improving constantly upon what we do. And so, being a guy that chairs two multi-million dollar nonprofits, I thought, hey, you know what? I don't have a committee meeting. Let me do a little research on some of these nonprofits. Nonprofits that are getting millions of dollars of state money. Let me tell you some of the things I discovered. I discovered nonprofits that when I checked their 990s, had not filed 990s in 5, 6, 7 years. Let me tell you what that means. If you don't file a 990 as a nonprofit unless you're a church, that means you lose your nonprofit status after 3 years. So this body that's tasked with spending taxpayer dollars, literally giving multi-millions of dollars away to nonprofits that don't even have the infrastructure and the sophistication to even file a 990. You know what else I discovered? 990s with $35,000, $40,000 a year in receipts, and we're giving them multi-million dollars. Grants on a non-competitive basis where they have not even proven they have the infrastructure capability to manage the money.
no audited financials, just friends helping friends. Billions of dollars without any competitive process. My dad was a laborer. He used to say he worked on a railroad. My mother was a factory worker. And my dad would only take off Labor Day every year. He would say, that's the only holiday the working man has, son. He would take Labor Day off every year. He worked hard to provide for his family, send me off as a first generation college student. These are the people that we represent in the North Carolina General Assembly. People that work hard every day and they pay their taxes. And what do we do in return in this budget? We give the money away to our friends without any consideration as even if they can provide the support and the proper services that we're asking for. The other issue I have with this budget that it lacks a vision for one North Carolina. Whether we like it or not, we are one North Carolina. I know we are 120 reps and we are 100 counties, but we are one North Carolina. And what I mean by that is when people leave Nash County, they go like my wife does to visit her parents in Spring Lake. They leave Nash County, they go to Edgecombe County. When they leave Nash County, they go to Halifax County and Hertford County. They go across county lines. And what we've done in this budget is that we have pitted a competitive process county against county. Hey, listen, vote for this budget as long as I hook you up in your county. One of these days, we won't be that person in leadership, in charge. And what we've done is we've perpetuated a non-competitive process that makes sure it's not fair for everyone. We have enough money to make sure it can be fair for everyone. But we've not done this. This budget, I'm just about done. This budget gives credit for doing things that should have already been done. My seatmate has already alluded to this. I won't spend a lot of time on it. But I'm about tired of hearing about Google and Apple and Amazon, everybody coming. Let me tell you why they're coming. It's called workforce. I was invited last month to speak to YPO. YPO is the Young President's Organization. And they asked me to meet with CEOs of companies between $25 and $100 million in revenue, Eastern North Carolina and Virginia. I met with them at the Jefferson Hotel in Richmond. They wanted to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. I asked those 16 presidents that I was with that afternoon, what is the single most important issue for you as a CEO of a company? 100% of them said workforce. The reason companies come to North Carolina is because they need diversity of workforce. And North Carolina has what no other state has, 10 historically black colleges and universities. So we ought not be crediting ourselves with our tax cuts and our J-digs and everything else that we offer to bring companies to this state. They come because they need a qualified workforce. This budget is killing that. It's killing that because it underfunds pre-K, it underfunds K-12, it underfunds community colleges, and it is going to choke the life out of our economy if we can't produce the workforce that companies come here for. So this budget, I'm a no on because it's doing things that should have already been done by funding our HBCUs, by giving itself credit for stuff that's being fixed that other people broke. And I'm a no for it because it lacks inclusion. It lacks inclusion philosophically, politically, and geographically. It was said that we want to pass a budget 120-0. So I was expecting a budget that was worthy of 120-0. But in order to have a 120-0 vote, we have to engage 120 people. We didn't do that. This is not a 120-0 budget. This is a 69-51 budget, in my opinion. This budget reminds me of an abusive husband. All of this good stuff that's in the budget, all this good stuff. What about the husband who provides for his family, pays all the bills, but he beats his wife and molests his children? No one would call that man a good man. This is not a good budget just because it pays bills. It is abusive and neglectful to the most vulnerable citizens in our state. To end with the words of a colleague, I understand you are under a lot of pressure to vote yes for this budget. I don't know what I would do if I were you, but the governor needs your no to make sure that he can get to the table to represent everyone in North Carolina. I would urge you in joining me in voting no for this budget. Thank you very much.
For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Baker, rise?
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, sir. On yesterday, I made an impassioned plea for those of you who have orchestrated this budget. And even in the midst of my high emotional state, I was very conscious to continue to listen for a pathway forward. But all I continued to hear repeatedly was, this is a good budget. You need to vote for this. See the big picture. Vote for this because of the big picture. But I would say, whose big picture? Because the big picture that has been presented over the last 2 days in this chamber did not include any of the brushstrokes from myself or from my colleagues. I also heard yesterday and again today from my colleague from Forsyth that no one came and asked us as if we need permission. We all serve on the same committees that selectively chose the people who were going to work on this budget. So I shouldn't have had to come and ask, like a child going to a parent, asking for permission for a right that I should have already had at the table. I heard it yesterday, and I heard it again today. Again, as my colleague just said, you can't see your blind spot. Every leader in this room knows that we all have a blind spot. So for you to continue to tell me that I didn't ask, when you didn't even recognize to say that out loud meant that there is a group of us that are more superior and know what's best. And so if you want to be considered, you must come and ask. That's not the way we should do things here. Now, I'm real clear about my lane. Education is my lane. But what I know is that as I heard my colleague talk about the numbers and then I heard the rebuttal, this is what I know. That $26,500 is the poverty level. If any of you, I dare say, have ever lived on that amount, then you come talk to me about how the tax levels will help, because I've been there. And so I don't mind telling my story because it's mine to tell. See, I've been on welfare twice. And I can tell you, lowering the tax rate only gives us a little more pocket money in our pocket once a year. It does not help us throughout the year. So we can't talk about lowering the tax rate without talking about raising the cost of living wage increase. We can't. It has to go hand in hand. I am before you today because I was able to access education. Oh, that's my area. As I tried to say yesterday, if you did not hear, the number of current vacancies in our five largest counties for teachers is 1,725. You add in the remaining, and we have over 6,000 potential vacancies. I also yesterday tried to stress that at the height of when we were considered one of the premier states in education, three major Fortune 500 companies relocated their headquarters here, not because we had the lowest tax rate, but because we had great educational systems. So, I also am now learning the politics of all of this. So, I get several text messages yesterday that said to me, if you don't vote for this budget, there are going to be things that are removed from the budget. Well, I'm one vote of 20. And as everyone on my other side of the aisle has eloquently let me know, I have absolutely no power. And so if things get taken out of this budget because I didn't vote yes, it's not because I didn't vote yes, but it was because you didn't exercise your power to keep those things in the county that we represent. And finally, I want to say this, that we are one voice. And, you know, I have a law degree. Did y'all know that? I got it from Perry Mason, Law and Order, West Wing. I'm just saying. We can't leave out Medlock, right? So I learned all that I know about debate for legal situations from their university. And what I know about this budget, putting on my lawyer hat that I got from TV, is that this budget is the first offering in negotiation. And for all you lawyers in the room who do it for a living, you all know that depending on what side of the negotiation table you're on, the first offering is always the lowball offering. Because you already have in your mind where you want to go. And so we're on the other side saying, we have now seen your lowball offering. And now we want to negotiate to a better deal. And so I'm saying to you, let's not repeat what we did that got us to this lowball offering. And everyone in this room, as I said yesterday, are masters of their craft. Every one of us are educated. Every one of us have amassed a certain amount of prosperity and education. And so every one of us in this room is capable of having decisions that include all of the voices. We've seen it over the last 2 days. And this has been a very, very respectful debate. But the reality of it is and remains that the budget that we're about to vote on in a few minutes only has a singular voice. And so I want to leave you with this. That as an educator and administrator with over 25 years of experience, that we must honor, trust, and empower our state licensed and certified educators to be able to make choices about the learning for our students. We must be considerate of the quality of life that we are continuing to create for all of our constituents in this state. And be mindful that all that you know is not all to be known. So be open to the fact that you had some good ideas, but maybe we just fell short because we didn't know. And so what I'm asking for is that as we move forward, recognize that you didn't know. And so we need to have some additional voices at the table so that we can have a more accurate budget that reflects all of North Carolina. And I will leave you with this. It is a quote from Nelson Mandela that says, let me tell you who he was. The first duly elected president of South Africa. And he served 27 years in prison for the fight for equal rights and the ending of oppressive systems of apartheid. And he has been known to be quoted on this following situation concerning education. Education is the most powerful weapon which you can ever use to change the world. And I would say, change North Carolina. And as many of us have said today and have recognized, the hard work. There is also an African proverb that says, many hands makes the work light. So let's not move forward and continue to only rely on a certain subset of people in this room to work hard when there are many hands that are willing and able to participate as we move forward. Thank you so much. Or as attorneys say, I rest, sir.
Gentleman from Guilford, Representative Hardister, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I've enjoyed the debate and listening to everyone. I feel like, for the most part, the debate's been very respectful and productive. But I do want to make a few points. One is following up on Representative Soka and the points that he was making about tax reform. I remember when I was a freshman, I can't believe I'm in my fifth term, and surprised my hair's not gray. I haven't been here for that long. I sat on the back row. I believe where Representative Pless is sitting now. That was my seat back in the day. And I was also on the Finance Committee my freshman term here. And I remember sitting on the Finance Committee when we're taking up tax reform for the first time. And that's when Tillis was Speaker. And I remember the opponents to the tax reform were saying that if you do this, we're going to lose revenue. We're gonna have deficits. We're gonna get less revenue. And that's not what happened. In fact, the opposite happened. We went from running deficits to having surpluses, and then the surpluses became fairly substantial. And the reason is because the amount of jobs that were created in the state of North Carolina. I ran for office primarily for that reason, because the state was on the wrong track economically. We're not in good condition financially. We were losing jobs. The Great Recession had a particularly severe impact on the state of North Carolina. But if you look at the trajectory of our budget revenue, it's been very steady, very solid, because people are coming here. The comment was made earlier that, you know, states like California are losing population. There's other states losing population. We're growing because this is a state where people want to be. The cost of living is relatively low. You can do business here. It's been said before that you don't need more taxes. You need more taxpayers. You need more people working. You know, we understand you have to have taxes, but the tax code has got to be conducive for business, and I think that's what we have. And also, as Representative Soka said, the tax cuts were gradual. You know, we're not slashing taxes. We're gradually cutting taxes while controlling spending at the same time. And that has been successful. Another thing that I want to address here is there have been some comments made about a lack of collaboration from this side of the aisle. And from my perspective, at least in my realm as an education appropriations chair, that's just not true. And I can give you a few examples of that. House Bill 216, NCANT State University Ag and Doctoral Funds. This is for the Ag Extension, that's $3 million recurring, and recurring, that's important. And then also the doctoral program, which will be ramped up to eventually over $70 million recurring. Again, recurring, that's important. That was a bill that was filed, and the lead sponsor of that bill is a Democrat. And there's 27 Democratic co-sponsors, and it's in the budget. And I made sure that was in the budget because I know that's important. And a word on the HBCUs. I know how important they are, and I agree with many of the comments made by Representative Hawkins. We need to do better and continue to do better, but this budget is a step in that direction. And then also, there's House Bill 215, Early Childhood Data Analytics, pilot for Guilford County. This bill has a Democrat sponsor as a lead, and it has 17 Democratic co-sponsors. And I'm not super familiar with that program, but some people back home talked to me about it. And the Democrat in this chamber who filed that bill as a lead, it's important to that individual who came to me and talked about it. And I made sure that was in the budget because it made sense to me. I thought this program could have efficacy. And I would submit that's not a Republican idea. That's a Democrat idea that's in the budget. And then next we have House Bill 613, GTCC Aviation Training Facility. Now, I know we have a great community college system, and we have several campuses across the state. maybe I'm a little bit partial to GTCC because I'm from Guilford County. I know that all the schools are great. But one thing of particular note about GTCC is they have plans to construct an aviation facility. And aviation is a big deal for us in Guilford County. We have PTI Airport. We also have Honda Jet, which makes jets. And we have HACO that does airplane maintenance and repair, Cessna that does airplane maintenance and repair. This is a $15 million project that's now in the SCIF. And that bill has a Democrat, there's a bill filed to provide that funding, has a Democrat lead sponsor and 8 Democratic co-sponsors, and it's in the budget. I'll give you another example. There's a Democrat member in this chamber who contacted me a few months ago and said, I've got an idea. We pay for AP exams for students who are in high school. Except because the way the statute's written, it goes through DPI, it excludes the high school students at the School of Science and Math and the School of the Arts. And I said, well, that's not really fair. That doesn't make sense. Let's fix that. That's in the budget. That wasn't my idea. A Democrat brought that idea to me. So I just want to make clear that from my perspective, the work that I've done on this, my door's been open, and I appreciate the collaboration. I think it's resulted in us having a better budget. And then one other thing I want to say about the HBCUs, Representative Lambeth talked a little bit about this before. In addition to our incredible HBCUs within the UNC system, we've got private HBCUs, and one thing of note in the budget is we have $100 million set aside, $100 million in recovery funds going to the private colleges and universities in this state. And the way we did this formula was it took that $100 million, cut it in half, and half of it is going to be allocated based on needs-based students in each of those institutions. The other half of it will be based on the CERISA formula, which is a federal formula, which is heavily weighted towards HBCUs. Now, Bennett College, which is relatively small, and we all know they've had a tough time. We've passed legislation in here related to their accreditation. They need some help. Well, guess what? The budget would give them $3 million, just over $3 million to go to Bennett. Then you got Johnson C. Smith. They get, this is incredible, over $14 million this budget would provide for them. Then you have Livingston College. They'd be provided with $12.5 million. St. Augustine, $8.1 million. Shaw University, $11 million. This will have a real impact on those private HBCUs, which have had a tough time with COVID. And the salaries, our state employees haven't had a raise in some time. And I would like to do more than what we're doing now, but we're balancing the budget responsibly. We're handling the money responsibly. These salaries have a real impact on the hardworking people who work for state government. And I won't get into it, but you can look at what the budget does for education, for capital, for the SCIF, for justice, public safety, for broadband. I mean, the list goes on. I would submit this is a great budget. If it's not great, I would think about, maybe remind you what you've probably heard before many times in your life, is don't let great be the enemy of good. I have a hard time thinking somebody could look at this and not at least think that it's a good budget and that it moves our state forward in a way that's positive. So again, I would ask you to support the budget, and we'll continue working. We'll be back next year in the short session. My door is always open to anyone in this chamber. If there's anything I could do for you, I'm always open for ideas. As I've illustrated before, there are several provisions in this budget that came from the other side of this chamber, and I appreciate the collaboration. I believe this budget will have a positive impact on state North Carolina. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman from Mecklenburg, Representative Autry, recognize debate the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, here we are again pushing the responsibility of this chamber down on the local municipalities. In the section of the conference report titled Broadband Acceleration on page 538, section 38.10M, as in Mary, this section prohibits municipalities from collecting inspection fees
from these well-heeled corporations that provide the broadband service from paying those fees. Now, if I or many of your voters wanted to add a rec room or an extra bedroom to your home, you would be responsible for covering the cost of those fees. That provides for that inspector to go to the site, make the inspection, and make the report back to the planning departments. I don't understand why, if this chamber wants to provide that subsidy to those corporations, that we don't pay for it ourselves instead of forcing the municipalities to shoulder that burden. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
Ask Chairman Lambeth a quick question if he'll yield.
Representative Lambeth, gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Thank you for yielding. We've been going through this pretty quickly, and you've done several cleanup amendments. Did the last amendment that you just ran on the floor, did that eliminate the last remaining provision of the voting statute or the voting provisions that were in the budget?
I really appreciate that question because I really should have given this a little bit more of a comment when I did that last amendment. But I was looking at a version, and it was difficult to follow exactly. But on page 493, there is a report required after elections, and what this amendment did was to eliminate that report that's in that section. So it did take that section out. So thank you for the question.
Members, the chair sees, well, now three whites on. And this is going to be the order the chair intends to take the vote. I see Representative Arp's light on. I'm going to call on Representative Arp to speak next. Then I was going to call on Representative Reeves and Representative Bell to be the final speakers of the day. And I'm going to take them in that order. So any members who activate their lights, unless they activate them right now, no lights are activated, they're not going to be recognized to speak. So the chair is going to take Representative Arp, Representative Reeves to give a closing argument for the minority leader, and then Representative Bell, closing argument for the majority leader. So those members who are off the floor may want to start making their way here. The gentleman from Union, Representative Arp, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Wow. I don't know where to begin. This budget and the fire of the rhetoric was compared to domestic violence. Something that is so atrocious that so many of our citizens have lived through in a nightmare. I cannot believe it. This budget spends the most we have ever spent in our collective good government, education, capital, parks, raises for our teachers and state employees, people who work hard every day. And this budget is domestic violence. I want to appeal to a compromise. What is compromise? This budget spends $9 billion in capital. This budget spends $25.7 billion for the needs of the state. How much is enough now? Not that you got everything, not that I got everything, but how much is enough now that we can walk together, work together, and say, okay, this is enough now, let's work together to get more later. I'm astonished. And maybe I'm a terrible politician. I don't know. But I'm astonished. Because I don't play games. I don't. I put it out there. I try to do good. Try to have character. Try to have character with you. Speak the truth. But what is the compromise? If the largest budget in the state history with $9 billion of investment in capital is not enough, what is? I was told that this is a negotiation, that this maybe is the first offer. But this is a, so I don't know. I don't play games like that. These are people's lives. We're months behind on passing a real budget, and the rhetoric that this budget is domestic violence is what we're come to. I'm saddened today that we can't celebrate the good things that we've done. We have successfully came through together disasters, two in one whole season, because of financial responsibility and living within our means. We've gone through recession and we're currently fighting the pandemic and supporting our businesses. But when you vote against the budget, you prolong relief. This budget rolls into our plan together, not Republican plan, our House plan, rolls in the American Relief Program, the funds for that goes to so many communities. And by voting this down, what happens when this gets voted down? We've successfully come through those tragedies and trying times because we've lived within our means and found common sense growth and invested where we needed to, rainy day funds. In fact, this budget has historic spending on programs that we all hold dear, with education, parks, and services, and people that we know, while providing tax relief to hardworking families so they can keep more of their salaries, and at the same time investing over $9 billion in our aging infrastructure across the state, water and sewer. We've got $500 million going to the most at-risk sewer systems, what's called the Viable Utility Reserve. The at-risk systems, we've got over $300 million and others another $600 million in grants going to stormwater. $1.6 billion alone coming in from federal monies that go to that. 30% of the SCIF funds for universities going to HBUs. I mean, it's just, my friend, Representative Hawkins, I'm sad with the rhetoric. Where is the compromise? Where is the compromise? Where's the line? If this is not enough on a historic budget with $9 billion of capital, we're on two different playing fields. I really care about each of you in here. I really do. I enjoy serving with you. But my heart hurts with that over-the-top type of rhetoric. It really does. I appeal to compromise. I ask you to sit back and think, there's a lot of good things here. Maybe we can do better. But it starts by voting on what we can collaborate today on together. I ask for your vote, and I thank you for being my colleague.
The gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing debate. This has been the most thoroughly debated budget I've been a part of. And it's been the most thoroughly debated really on both sides, to be candid. There have been statements from one to the other and things of that sort. So I do appreciate the allowance of that. And I think that was necessary. I want to thank staff for their patience. They really had to work this week, especially with this going, redistricting, things of that sort, so I appreciate it. And I want to reiterate what I said the first time I talked. I really do thank the chairs for the work they did. The only thing I would say at this point, I could give you a summation. I would posit that if you don't know what everybody's position is right now, there's probably not anything I could do to tell you what those positions are. So going on the presumption that you have heard positions, I would just say this. One of the things that happens when debate goes this long, and and when we talk to each other, especially when both sides have gone through a lot of work, is it gets a little tense at some point. We try our best for it not to happen, but it starts to get tense. In whatever part you've played, when you've put in a lot of work into something, it's hard when somebody decries your work, or on the other side, if somebody says, well, you're not paying attention or you just don't know what you're doing. That's hard. And so what I would say going forward, the bill's going to pass. And I'm not saying that cynically or anything of that sort. We've already had second reading vote. There's no mystery or anything of that sort. I believe confidently, just as I said, that I think you know all positions. I would bet that some of the folks in the Senate probably have an idea what the positions of everybody in the House are, too. There are good things in the budget. Said that from the get-go. It is a historic budget because we've got more money available to spend than we've ever had. It kind of has to be at that point. We will continue to support the things that we have told you look good in this budget and that we like. But what I would ask you to do is to, just as some of our members have been asked not to do this, and I would ask them not to do this, I would ask the same of both caucuses. Don't ascribe motives, because you just don't know. I honestly feel that, considering the amount of time, especially folks on our side have had a chance to read this budget, they've busted their behinds. And I know that doesn't always mean anything to folks, because, you know, it gets to what Raymond Smith was saying earlier, in the sense of, well, that's the job we signed up for, and it is. But they busted their behind. There are people over here who went through the Senate budget because we didn't have a House budget to look at, and then went through the House budget, and I mean, really got down deep into the details. And it was no pressure, no anything, because I can only speak for me, and I would not dare speak for anybody else, but one of the most important things to me is being part of the caucus. And I think that's the same for a lot of members in a Republican caucus, is that people feel good about what they're supporting. Not that they feel good about every page, not that they feel good about every part of their vote, but they feel they've been informed, they understand, and they come to a decision. When I talk to caucus members, I just want to know what they feel. And I think if you ever been a part of any kind of caucus, you know there are going to be times that you're going to feel different than other people. In fact, there will be times that you will be in a very, very slim minority. I probably had a couple of times where I've had an opinion on a bill and I've had to look in the face of 50 other people that say, are you crazy? And that's fine. And what you do is you go with the will of the body, which is what we're doing here. I understand that there are folks that are going to vote yes. And I believe you're voting yes because you believe this is the best direction to go. But I would ask you to also respect those that are voting no. It's not about some magic presence on high telling them that they've got to do it. And I don't say that in a religious sense. I say that in a political sense because I know that is the intimation that I've heard. It is not about, it definitely isn't about me. The couple of you that have been in the minority before, I want you to tell me if there's some secret that a minority leader has that they can put pressure on somebody in the caucus. Last thing I knew, the only stick that we had was to be able to say, please, 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 please. So that there's no pressure. You've just got people who have strong feelings about parts of this budget. And there are parts of this budget that I think that if you look from a different perspective, you can understand why there will be some hesitancy. Because we all feel that we're going to be able to, in conference, come to some type of compromise. And I'll tell you right now, I'd be happy if this was the final vote on the budget. I'd be happy if whatever was going to happen today ended the budget process. Fine with me. But the truth is, even if we voted 120 to nothing, or 0 to 120, that there's still a process to go through. What I've appreciated is that the speaker's already said that they plan to involve the governor. I hope that I'll get to at least sneak in at the kids' table, watch, do something. But I do believe that there is an intent on all sides to come to some type of compromise. And I would reiterate, and I respect what one of my friends has said, it's not about money. Yes, we would like to see spending in different areas, but it's not a situation where somebody is saying, oh, you're not spending enough money. Oh, we need just money, money, money. Because I'll be the first to tell you, I believe completely in not just throwing money at problems. I believe completely in responsible spending, responsible burdens, and making sure that everybody's paying their fair share. And that gets lost sometimes when we talk about spending. I want to make sure that we're not pushing down on counties. I want to make sure that folks that are working every day and having to work two and three jobs aren't actually paying more of their money that they've got to have than those of us who don't have to do that. Because when you think about tax policy and things of that sort, and I definitely don't know as much as Representative Zoka and Representative Harris, I can't even have those conversations. But what I know as a practical matter is this. If you're taking 5% of my $15,000 as opposed to 5% of my $500,000, I can probably do a little bit more with what's left over if I've got the $500,000. And so the burden is more on me if you're taking 5% of my $15,000. Those type of discussions. But all of this is perspective. All of this is all of us trying to figure out how to come together on a vision that moves everybody forward. And I sincerely believe every one of us here want to move this state forward. All of us. I don't believe there are bad motives. I've dealt with a lot of you. I'd love to be able to jump up here and say you're horrible people because of the letter behind your name, but you're not. All of us come from such different backgrounds and perspectives that we have to do what we have to do. And we have to come from those perspectives. What we've got to do more of, all of us, everybody, is learn more to empathize with the other person's viewpoint and understand why they have the view that they have, and then try to figure out how to come to common ground. And this session has taught me one thing. More than any other session in my 7.5 years, it has taught me that we have the ability in this chamber. We have the mix of people. We have the right leaders to come to a compromise. I'm looking forward to doing that. I'll have to vote no today, not because of rhetoric, not because of politics, not because of pressure, because I have sincere beliefs that I feel like outweigh my ability to cast a yes vote today. It's easy to vote yes. It's easy just to go along and just say, you know, I'll just get over this other stuff. And that's part of what we have to do with big documents. But just as one of my friends said earlier that he could not vote for something because he hadn't had enough time to read it, I've learned to take that a little more seriously the longer I've been here. I think all of us have had one-page bills that sometimes once we voted for, saying, woo, didn't realize that's what that did. And so some of us have that misgiving. Going forward, we're going to be here, all of us, for another year, no matter what happens. Going forward, continue to do what we've done generally this session. And up until the last couple of weeks, we have done a good job of making sure bills get vetted, get talked about, there's interaction, and there's collaboration. Keep that going forward. We're going to have a good process, and we're going to end up with a budget that a governor can sign, that all the Republican leadership can feel good about, the Democrat leadership can feel good about, and I'm going to feel good because I'm going to be able to go anywhere in this country and look at these other legislatures, and tell them, we know how to do this. You guys need to start watching us and figuring this out. I haven't completely lost hope in D.C., but D.C.'s D.C. But I think that if state legislatures around the country can learn how to work within each other, because government's best the closer it is to home, then we're really going to do some great things, and I'm looking forward to that, but I would ask you to vote no today.
Gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm well aware that I stand between you and a green button. I've enjoyed the debate over the last 2 days, and it's kind of interesting because even if you step outside the chamber and go to the bathroom or step out and grab a drink, everywhere you go around this building, you can't avoid the debate. One of the scariest moments of my freshman year was realizing that a speaker was in the bathroom when Speaker Tillis hit the gavel, and, well, you know, I jumped. But in all seriousness, it's very interesting to listen to the concerns and the praises on both sides of the aisle with the budget. You know, it wasn't just Democrats disagreeing with Republicans, or Republicans having issues and going back and forth. And you know, but that's part of a comprehensive spending plan. That issue has happened today, and it's going to continue to happen as long as this great institution is here. But I'm very glad that the speaker allowed this debate to happen, because many of you actually reached out to me through text message in the halls and said, hey, man, do what you can do. Do what you can do. But no, that wouldn't be the right thing to do. And so I was glad we allowed the debate to happen. This budget isn't perfect. If you want a perfect budget or a perfect bill, you're never going to find one, because it doesn't exist. When you have 120 people from 120 different places, 120 different personalities, there's always going to be some type of disagreement or some type of misunderstanding or something you don't like. That's just the way it is. But we've talked a lot over the last, almost over 10 hours, over the last 2 days, on the process. And this process just didn't start on Monday or Wednesday. I'll actually argue that this process started almost a year and a half ago, when the speaker had the foresight to put bipartisan committees together to figure out how this state and this body was going to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. And what you see today is a continuation of that process that started that long ago. Then as we come into session, we get the governor's budget, we look at his recommendations. Some of those recommendations are in this document today. Then we get the Senate's budget, look at their recommendations. Some of their recommendations are in this budget today. And then it becomes our turn. And this just didn't start a few days ago. It was months ago, as our appropriation chairs, area appropriation chairs, are working through the process. Then it gets into how much money we're going to spend. We have to get data from our central staff. Then we go through area committees, where each one of you who serves on those committees had an opportunity to take part in that discussion. Then we go to full appropriations. We sat in full appropriations for almost a whole day, listening to amendments, and everybody had an opportunity in here to work through that process. Then the bill goes to finance, where we had more discussion, more opportunities. Then we go to pensions and retirements, where we had even more opportunities. And even before this budget got to the floor, many of you on both sides of the aisle met with me, met with Representative Hall, met with the speaker, met with our appropriation chairs. Actually, some of you came in groups, some of you came as individuals, and you included yourself in this process. And some of the same people that said, well, I wasn't in the process, actually have projects and stuff in the budget where they were part of the process. And so I look at we're at third reading today, and the process has worked. And of course, everybody isn't going to be happy. We've also debated bills that have come through this chamber. Some have gone on to become, well, missing in action in the Senate. Some have actually worked through the Senate process, but we debated bills that have come through this chamber that are actually here in this budget. Each one of you had an opportunity during that time to put amendments, to have input, navigate the committee process. Is here in this budget. You've also heard from countless lobbyists, trades groups, department liaisons, organizations, constituents, encouraging everyone in this building to take part and engage in the process. Trust me, I know the thousands of emails and phone calls and text messages that some of you are actually getting right now as we're speaking, or did today before we close this budget bill up and pass it on to the Senate. And they're all asking every one of us to engage in the process, to be a part of the process. That's why they meet with you. Let's engage in this process together as we move forward in conference. And I look at what's actually in the budget, the substance of this spending plan. And members, every single one of you in here are passionate about something, or else you wouldn't be here. And if you look at this spending plan, if you're passionate as state employees and retirees, You find large raises. I remember I was actually talking with somebody outside. I remember a few years ago when we were excited to do 0.5% in the first biennium, 0.5% in the second biennium, and we thought we were on to something. Now we're looking at state employees receiving 5.5% raises, 7% raises, some teachers even getting 10% raises. You're looking at retirees getting bonuses on top of that. You're looking at state employees. I mean, this is truly a wonderful financial package. Of course, I wish we could do more, but it's a responsible step for sustainability for our state and supporting our state employees and retirees. If your passion, I've heard a lot about this the last 2 days, is education. Look at the pay raises in for our teachers. Think about the bus drivers, the cafeteria workers, the teacher assistants that are now going to get to be $13 an hour to $15 an hour. Think about the impact on their lives. Look at the innovative programs that we have in education. Look at the capital spending that's going in, not just our universities, but our community college. There's also K-12 school construction dollars put into this budget. If health care is your passion, look at the additional funding we've put into health care programs all throughout the state. Look at the innovative programs that you're doing there. Yesterday, we all unanimously voted to extend the cancer benefits to our firefighters here in the state of North Carolina. And very personal to me is this budget includes something that we've been fighting for almost 15 years. And in eastern North Carolina, we've been fighting for a new Brody School of Medicine. This budget funds the Brody School of Medicine, which doubles the seats for providers. And the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University puts more healthcare professionals in North Carolina than any of the other schools. They actually stay right here. A lot of them in rural North Carolina where they're desperately needed. If economic development is your driving force and your passion, look at the tax cuts. Look at the historic preservation tax credits that now become permanent. Look at the mill credits that now become permanent. The transformations that have happened across our state because of these two items alone for economic development for our downtowns is truly remarkable. The broadband connectivity. You know, we're well on the way to being the first state in the country from our mountains to our coast and all in between to connect every citizen with broadband connectivity. That's something that all 120 of us should be proud of. If veterans is your passion, if our military is your passion, we brag and say that we're the most military-friendly state in the country. With the tax cuts, exemption to our military personnel, and something that every single one of you wanted in your district, which was No Veteran Left Behind, a mental health pilot program for our veterans, which is now not contained just to 4 or 5 counties. It actually will be deployed across the state. If veterans is your passion, that is something to vote for. If you like the dirt and you like water and sewer and infrastructure and you have small towns all over this state that are begging, that people are worried because their actual water and sewer bill is higher than their mortgage. I know every single one of you have county commissioners, city council people calling asking you, say, we need help with infrastructure. If that is your passion, if flood mitigation is your passion, which today we have a plan for almost $1 billion in flood mitigation strategies that affect every single county in this state. Never been done before. If that is your passion, it is in this budget. Friends, this is a good budget. This is a bipartisan budget. And this is a budget that all of us should be proud of. I ask for your vote.
The question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 105 on its third reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 72 having voted in the affirmative, 41 of the negative. Senate Bill 105 passes its third reading. Bill is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by special messenger. Members, we have concluded our business for the day and for the week. Next week, we'll begin the conference process informally, and of course, we'll be appointing conferees next week as well on the budget, and so we'll undertake that. The chair can guarantee that there will be no votes on Monday. We'll have to look to see about Tuesday if there'll be votes. I know a number of committees are going to be meeting. I believe the redistricting committee may be meeting next week, and I'm informed some other committees are looking to meet as well, but it would appear that the bulk of next week's work will involve going through trying to resolve a conference report on the State Budget Act. I do want to thank, and I know most of the staff have left. They were here yesterday and the day before and here today. Our central staff worked really hard to help get things where we needed to be. Our Sergeant Arms staff did, of course, always a great job. And then, of course, our clerk staff. So I just want to thank all of you for what you've done. I ask my colleagues to join me. And in concurring with the, or conferring rather with the rules chair, it may be Wednesday when we need our first recorded votes. Just just pay attention to your notices. We'll make sure, Representative Reeves, make sure you're informed so you can notify your caucus. Representative Bell, same to you as well. Notices and announcements for what purpose? The gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, rise.
For a brief moment of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you. This morning, it was bow time. Triarch Food Systems, which operates 52 Bojangles franchises in the Raleigh-Durham area, brought in about 600 biscuits. I hope you enjoyed them. This was our fifth annual event, and I hope you will shop Bojangles because, man, those biscuits are delicious. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Bradford. You have hurt many people's diets this week, I can tell you. For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise?
For a point of personal privilege.
The lady has the floor.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to give a shout out today to some people that I don't think we all realize how hard they really work. We have recognized all of our staff that has worked hard on the budget. But there's a group of people in this building that I used to be one of them. Back in the late 60s, some of you know this, but there are a lot of you that are new that don't know that. I used to be a bill typist for one term, and I had enough of it after one term and left. But that was back in the day when we sat in the bottom of this building near the cafeteria in a room, no windows. The bills were ratified up here, and they were sent down, and we typed them, and they went into law. That was back in the day that you could not use correct tape on electric typewriters. So if you made a mistake on a 55 or a 655 bill, page bill, and you made a mistake on page 2 after the bill typist correcting group read them, you had to go back and do the whole bill over. So I want to give a shout out to the people on our bill typing staff. Because when you take an amendment in, somebody runs it off, constantly we've been churning those fingers on those computers. So a shout out to them. They're not in here, but I know you're listening. Thank you.
What purpose does the lady from Johnson, Representative White, rise?
Announcement.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tuesday morning at 10, the Help Committee will be meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further notices or announcements? Any announcements from the clerk? No, sir. Seeing no further notices or announcements, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Monday, August 16th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Bell, that the House now adjourn to reconvene Monday, August the 16th at 4 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.